Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Survivor Update. I'm your host, Turn Armstrong, and joining me this week to talk about the winners at war is Puya. How you doing, Puya?
I'm doing well, Taryn. This has been a great season of Survivor. They're all winners. I'm a winner in my own right, in a very particular type of way, if you want to look at it. I'm not going to be that guy. We're going to move past it and talk about what everyone's here to hear. And that's Survivor.
Yes. Yeah, I think the right move was to wait for me to bring up the fact that you won. And then you're like, oh, Taryn, we don't need to talk about that silly thing.
It's gotten to my head. I'm no longer humble. It's a whole thing now.
You know, it happens to the best of us, Puya. You win one game and you're all of a sudden, you know, I'm king of the castle. And then you go on to an all winter season and you get humbled.
Yeah. And I mean, I got to keep it quiet because the reason I won is in the other room and they will not be happy to hear that I'm taking the credit myself. So we'll just move past.
All right. Well, we are here to talk about Survivor and this week's episode of Winners at War. There's a lot to get into here, but the top line, the headline story, Adam Klein has finally met his departure date on Survivor. He's finally going to the edge where he did not want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a arc that I've been thinking is going to end from like episode one or two. So the fact that we get all the way over here for it to wrap up is incredible. And it was just glorious to see it kind of destruct the way it did throughout. Like, it's like, oh, it can't get anywhere. Oh, it looks worse. Oh, maybe it can't get. It's a little bit more messy. So it's been a lot of fun to watch as a viewer. I have zero qualms with it. But I feel bad for Adam, but also, you know, kudos for being able to make it here despite of what we've been seeing.
Yeah, really. From episode one, where he was the name and he had to get that off of himself. And then basically almost every episode since, Adam has been a possibility if he's going to tribal. And even when he didn't go to tribal, we usually checked in on his tribe to find out that if we were going to tribal now, be Adam. And then they don't go to tribal. And I have to imagine that part of that is like, part of that strain is why we're getting the confessionals that we're getting from Adam, where like he looks like he's ripping the hair out of his head and he's losing his mind because he has been on this journey the whole time, where like every single tribal he is scared to death that this might be him, and he's just clawing his way forward week by week, or tribal by tribal, but he finally is going to meet his match here.
Yeah. And Liana, Mike, and Kirsten brought it up on the BNB. It was very much a Dr. Adam, Mr. Klein kind of situation throughout the last couple of weeks for me. Just watching him kind of be two people and have two views on what's happening, the reality of it, and then the harsh reality of it. So, yeah, I mean, I feel bad for Adam. But again, like the fact that he was able to make it as far as he did, the fact that we got to see more of a story than we maybe should have, it's all good in that sense.
Yes. All right. Let's get into the episode here, because I thought this was a great episode. I'm normally not a huge reward challenge fan, and I certainly think we could have done without the reward challenge. But I still feel like everything I got from this episode was good. I liked the extinction segment. I even liked the challenge segment, at least what it did to the game. And so I really can't find a lot of flaws. Then the ending of this episode just was so fantastic. So I was really into this one. I won't hear any complaints.
No, and you're not going to get any from me. Honestly, I am someone who probably leading into this episode was like, I don't want to see a reward challenge. I'm happy we haven't seen one. it ultimately did lead into helping us understand a little bit more about some more arcs, which is appreciated. And this was kind of like a balanced diet because we did get a little bit of everything, even though in the middle it kind of seemed a little bit confusing and a little bit too much too fast. But it all worked out given the person who went out. This was the perfect send off for that person, it being chaotic and all over the place. So yeah, all for it.
I mean, I'm still down for, you know, like 2 hour episodes. Like we're still up for that. But I did like this one. So we start off right away, and I always love episodes that start off with some fallout from the previous tribal. We get the fallout from Wendell's vote out. He's gone from the game, and Michelle is not pleased. And they're really, the edit with Michelle is so strange this season, where they're just really trying to reconcile the fact that she was working with Wendell, but also didn't want to work with Wendell. And so they have to sort of like merge these two ideas. And so she says, well, look, I'm annoyed. I'm really annoyed because I wanted Wendell out and I told people that I was on board, but they blindsided me again. And it's a little bit like, really, Michelle, like, yeah, of course you were going to say that, but like, of course they're not going to tell you they're voting out your ex-boyfriend when you were just working with him on the tribe that you were on.
Right. Like, despite what the updated relationship status is, the fact is in Survivor, where you were voting counts more. So if the evidence is the votes and you were voting with him, there is no reason to believe that you are willing to feed him to the wolves or throw him to the wolves, rather. So it makes sense from that perspective. And Michelle, you know, kind of like unknown, doesn't know what to do about it. It's like, oh, I got blindsided. But I feel like the two people that got blindsided, one of them did somewhat of a better job than the other one in kind of reeling it in the moment post the debacle.
This was really funny. I really enjoyed this scene between Michelle and Nick because like Michelle is really angry and she's trying to vent, but Nick is also really angry. And so it goes a little something like this. Michelle goes, I hate these people. Nick says, me too. I hate them to death. And then Michelle says, they're all bumbling, fumbling idiots. I can't stand them. And Nick says, yeah, I can't stand them either. And Michelle says, I'm just over it. And Nick goes, nobody will say a name. I'm over it. Like, he just keeps, he's like the anti-hype man where like he's just repeating all of her negative statements, but being like, yeah, especially. I really also hate them to death. It was great.
I hate them more. I hate more, me more, whatever you're feeling times two for me. That's how it came off to me.
He's like, I'm the angry one. Remember my last season when something didn't go my right way and I threw a fit? Like, that's me. I'm supposed to be the one, Michelle. Stop throwing a fit. I'm throwing a bigger fit. It was great.
Yeah. The very reason coming into the season, people talking about all of the winners in the preseason, we're talking about how they're not really too hot on Nick, this was the evidence they said. They said he was very salty when things didn't go his way, and that's not a good look. And we didn't really see it until now. And now it's like as if everyone rejoices. We were right. We saw this coming. And and like my favorite line was the it took me back to BB-70. It took me back to James Hewling, the I love blood. That and Nick talking about loving blood and wanting to be involved with blood. I was like, okay, Nick. Simmer down, man.
Well, he also has, after Michelle says, you know, it was between you and Adam, Nick goes, why am I on the block? And I just love all of the, like, Nick just takes a big brother approach to Survivor, and I love it. So he's, why am I on the block on my birthday?
Yep.
Which is, I know, a Survivor reference, you could say, but also, you know, we could pull a Big Brother from here.
More recently, Big Brother.
Yeah, it's not his daughter's birthday, but it's close enough. Nick just wants to let them have it. And Michelle's like, I don't think that's a good idea. And so that's when Nick tells us that there's going to be bloodshed and I'm going to like it. I'm going to get on that train now where I love blood. It's all about the blood because they went for him on his birthday. And I was just like, Nick, the strategy is to not play on your birthday. So they can't do it to you on your birthday. That's what you got to do.
Keep the machete away from this kid. That is my big takeaway. on at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so Tony comes in. And he's trying to do some damage control, and he's just like, no, Nick, we're not gunning for you. And he's like, you're always gunning for me. And he's like, no, not in this moment. Then we get to Adam, and right away, I've been loving what we are getting from Adam, but like the more his mental state has been deteriorating as he is constantly the target, the crazier and just like more nonsensical, like, and just like so passionate his confessionals are getting. He's just like, Ma, oh, my heart was beating so fast. Oh, I was so incredibly nervous, but I'm here. It's like, okay, well, I'm here another few days.
It plays to me like if this season was Winners at War, but they flew in a big fan of the show who knows all the names, who knows all the winners, and they made them play. That's how it plays. Like that energy, that nervousness, that like I'm dying every tribal council. That's how he's emitting it. And he's a winner. He's one of these winners. He's on the same level. But when he reacts that way, that is a genuine fan-like reaction. So that's been very fun to see in the midst of all these very confident, cocky pros.
Yeah, it's I loved it. I tweeted out like seriously every time Adam has a confessional, it's just electric on the screen, and I love it. And there were some people that are like, "Are you being sarcastic?" I'm like, "No, genuinely. This is great. I am loving the television that Adam has been giving us all season long. I'm sad to see this be what is probably the end of it. But it definitely culminated in a great way. So you can't be too mad. But he's so Adam. Adam sees Michelle being on the outs as an opportunity. And so this is when he is going to let Michelle know about his theory about, hey, I think that there might be an idol at Tribal because there's this fleur-de-lis that is on the voting podium, and that it's shaped just like the idol that Denise got. And so I'm thinking that it might be an idol. And, you know, hey, if I'm right, pretty epic way to save myself, right?
Legend status, legend tier, if I get to do this. And this is where we, as people who watch all of these shows, end up finding ideas. Because this stems from another iteration of Survivor that is not the US version. Because we've seen this happen over there. And Adam is one of us, right? Adam is one of us. So he's definitely collected this data and he thinks of it from all cylinders. It is a very smart look. It's a very smart thing to think about, to notice in the midst of all this. Why wouldn't this be an idol? He's also seen a replica of an idol. So why wouldn't this be a thing? Given the format of your show, Taryn, I know that we'll talk about it later. So I'll table it. But I will say that this was fun to see, although I will be taking a task if I don't call him out for saying fleur-de-lis. There's no S. Stop saying S. But other than that, good segment.
I agree. I think that this is it's a good call. We've been seeing little snippets of Adam looking for things at the voting booth at various points in Tribal. We also saw like Boston Rob was doing it too. Like this is they should be doing this. And it's one of those situations like if this was Big Brother Canada, then Jeff would have been like, sorry, it's not an idol. And then later in the season, he would have been like, and now we're going to give this, which is an idol, to fan favorite Tony or something, which would not be great. But at least we'll be OK there. So we head over to Extinction, and over at Extinction, they're doing some Extinction yoga.
That's right. Danny, Parv, and Natalie.
Mm-hmm. And I personally feel like not only do we need 2-hour episodes, but we need a whole side spin-off series that is Extinction Yoga with Parvati for those in need right now who need some yoga classes.
That would play really well. That would get the views. I'm pretty sure I'd get the participation. It's good marketing.
Yeah. Are you isolated right now with potentially limited food? Here's some yoga to do in this situation,
in this trying time. Here's a little bit of calmness and mindfulness coming your way via island from Parvati.
Yeah. So they get a clue that Yule is joking. I think there's a pizza in here. I think we got a pizza. It's not a pizza. It's just some clues. And the clue is referencing when Aubrey found an advantage in the previous extinction where it was like hidden in the little holes near the steps. And so they all go off trying to find it. It's like, oh, it's one of the ones we've found already. But no, it was in fact one from a previous season. And Danny was the one that actually caught that out. And then Parvati was the one that remembered that it was Aubrey on the steps. And so together they're going to find the advantage here.
I love it. Cause this is the crop at extinction right now, outside of Wendell, who just joined, and Natalie, who unfortunately went out first, is old school players. So for these old school players to not only come to this conclusion that it could be about the last edge of extinction season, but then to also remember where that was. I mean, I know it was the last season before they went out there, but I was more impressed with that it was them than I would have been if it was an Adam. Or if it was a Nick, because they're of the, you know, they're the new crop of folk. I mean, I'm sure they're watching this stuff, you know, but I don't really know about the old school. The fact that Danny was the one that got there before Parv too, I was like, damn, look at that. So yeah, this was very fun. I did not even remember this. So they had me beat. I'll say that.
Yeah, I loved this clue. Like, normally I just don't care about the clues and whatever, because it's, come on. But I thought this was actually pretty clever. Referencing a previous season is great. I didn't remember this hiding spot either. Maybe Parvati just managed to remember, but more likely, in my opinion, she was probably, like, paying attention to where these things were hidden, because it's always, you're always on the same island now, and if extinction is in play, then they're going to be hiding things on there. And so why not pay attention to where things were hidden previously? But who knows? We do hear from Natalie that she had initially wanted to split people up because she wanted to make sure to leave Wendell and Yule out of any food. It seemed like they all had agreed that if they find this, we're going to use it on food, but we're going to exclude Yule and Wendell from it. Natalie's logic was, well, Wendell just had a merge feast and Yule, he just got here, right, too. Yeah. So basically just not Yule, which I thought was interesting. It seems like Extinction has its own little group alliance here that share food and exclude two people from it.
It's the battle of who's the most starving. And those that are the most starving have now come together and formed a coalition. And the reasoning for Wendell makes complete sense. The guy just had a merge feast. Fair enough. Poor Yule. Yule's been here. You guys all had advantages last round. Yule had nothing. So let him have a little bit. Let him work with you. But I mean, you got to try and find as many people as you can to keep away from it so that the rest of you can agree to share the bounty that is the food, the riches. Because one person will get it and then they have to choose to share it, right? So if they've made an agreement, it's hard to try and bring more people into it and more food for you. So
I guess so, yeah. I love Parvati too when she finds the advantage. She's like, I'm doing it. I'm playing Survivor again. I found a thing. I feel like a mouse trapped on this mouse experiment. And finding the prize was like my piece of cheese. And so she's found this 50-50 advantage. Interesting that she says she found some cheese because she's going to get some peanut butter from the cheese. She was like some cheese with the peanut butter. I don't know how well that would go, but, you know, it's I wouldn't turn it down if I were on Extinction.
Yeah.
So it's a 50-50 advantage is what it's called. And so what this does is that it's a big coin. It's a lot bigger than I think it needs to be. It's really hard to flip this, I imagine. When Michelle later is flipping it, I feel like she's just like, it's like tossing it up. Like, what are we supposed to do here? But it's a big coin, essentially. And on one side, it says safe. And on another side, it says not safe.
Wow. So, what's the opposite of safe?
Yeah, not so you safe. Bring it to tribal, and then I guess when Probst says, does anybody want to play any hidden immunity idols, you go, well, hey, hold up, Jeff, and you whip out your coin. You're just like, I just like to flip this coin. I feel like what I would do in that spot is like just grab a cameraman and just be like, hey, come here, and I just like kind of to the side of me secretly just kind of flip it. Because if it says not safe, like, I really don't want to be embarrassed.
Right, yeah.
I don't like, it's one thing for Adam to go up and try to pull an idol off the podium, but for you to stand up and be like, hold on, I gotta flip a coin to save my life right now. That's a little embarrassing, I think.
Yeah, especially if it doesn't go your way. Yeah. And if it goes your way, it's like, well, I got lucky. Like, that's literally all it boils down to. Yeah, I don't know what this, why we, this 50-50 puck is a thing that we have in the game now. I know that this is different than the 50-50 opportunity that Detective Dean had last season, but it's derived from the same, right? It's like, you flip it, and if you're good, you're good. You're safe. I don't know if I like it. Again, the spectacle part of it as a player, if you're playing this, you stand a chance of either looking just really stupidly lucky or really stupidly stupid. So I feel like it's a lose-lose ultimately, even though you're safe for another day.
Yeah, I honestly feel like the most value that you can get from this advantage is in a situation where the players don't have the numbers to split votes. And then ahead of time, you can say, hey guys, I've got this coin. You can vote for me, but there's a 50-50 chance that it will not go your way. And if it doesn't go your way, then we're deciding who the vote falls on, or who, whatever. And you can do the Malcolm, right? Like, or try to. But beyond that, like, it's really just like a last minute, last ditch sort of like, well, I'm voted out. Might as well flip a coin, see if I can survive.
And you can't like flip the coin for someone else, right? I can't get up and be like, Jeff, can I flip a coin for Taryn?
Well, you might be able to give it to somebody else, right?
Yeah, hand it over and have them do it. I assume so. I think it's transferable in that way.
Who flips the coin? Because like I said, it's hard to flip. So like, if I'm the one flipping the coin, I'm going to have a lot more faith that I could get it to land on safe. Because it's such a big thing. Like, I would be practicing for hours to like figure out the trick of making it land on safe every time.
Right.
So I would imagine that you got to give the coin to Jeff and then Jeff flips it.
Yeah, because otherwise then are there rules? Like, does it have to turn 720? Does it have to turn twice before it counts? Mm-hmm. Because if you game it enough, maybe in like a half a flip, you can get it kind of thing. So I think Jeff flips it and that's how it goes. It's got to be, right? It can't be you flip it.
I don't know. I would imagine that to be the case, because like I would get it, because you can game it so that it flips like a full 360 at least in control and then have it land on the right, because it's so big. It'd be very easy to do. So we'll see. But Parv wants to sell this to Michelle because she knows that Michelle has the most amount of fire tokens with 4. And she knows the value of these advantages. She wants to sell it for 4 whole fire tokens, everything that Michelle has. And then she's going to use that to buy some peanut butter. She says she thought about keeping it to herself, but her heart just can't not let them in on it. And so they have 6 people in their group looking to eat something that Parvati, Danny, Ethan, Amber, Rob, and Natalie, everyone except for Yule and Wendell, will get some peanut butter. So she's going to spend that 1 token on the peanut butter. There is a secret scene where she buys the peanut butter, but that does mean, I believe, that she still has 3 remaining for herself. So quite a good deal from this 50-50 advantage here for Parv.
Oh, very good haul. I came into this a little skeptical that this would, I thought 4 was way too steep of a price. I was like, there's no way this is going to work out for you. But it did. She gets to share the bounty with her, you know, companions. They all get a little bit of peanut butter. The secret scene was a lot of fun. Watching them do yoga and do yums instead of ums was great. Love that. But ultimately for me, I was surprised that it worked out, but it couldn't have gone any better. You're sitting with 3 more tokens that you can spend whenever. It's too good.
I am seeing somebody say in the chat that the value of peanut butter did go up. I did not see that, but I'm not sure if anybody else has data on that. I tried to you know, hone in on the advantage list, but I didn't quite see it. Maybe there was one and I didn't see it. But either way, she does buy some peanut butter. And I can't imagine that it cost 4 whole tokens. So I imagine she has some amount left.
At least some change back. At least. Yeah.
So as I said, there was a secret scene revolving around this, this peanut butter. It was, I believe, called Peanut Butter and Yoga, because they do some more yoga. Parv says she's the happiest little clam on extinction. She has the 4 tokens. She's going to get some peanut butter. And she said that, that Michelle bought the Advantage hook, line, and sinker. There you go. And so she says, I get it might be hard to understand why I would spend tokens on peanut butter, but I am desperate for food and I just want to keep myself as sane and strong as possible. And so she takes the peanut butter, she stashes it away, she buries it. And then she goes and she lets Ethan and Rob know during some yoga that some crunchy, delicious peanut butter is on the way. And so Rob says the food situation, he says, I've played Survivor more than anybody, and the food situation on the edge is the worst I have ever experienced. The only reason I have energy right now is because I found out we're getting some peanut butter later.
And of course, crispy and crunchy go hand in hand. Rob loves himself some crunchy, is what we learned.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I did find out that Tyson went for crunchy as well, which, you know, it's a bad choice, but here's the thing. I was like, you know what? I understand. They're on extinction. They have no other food. They're just eating plain peanut. They need some crunch in their life.
Get a bit of chew in you. Yeah.
They're not spreading this on their rice or anything. So right. The crunch makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think so. I think in that circumstance, you know, a little bit of chomp chomp is good. Feels good. Feels humane. I mean, I understand why Parv did it. You know, talking about keeping sane and well fed is very important when you know you're just going to be popping a squat here for like at least another, 10, 15 days or so. So the saner you are, the more energy you'll have. The more energy you have comes from food. If you have those two together, come the next challenge, you'll be in a better place to go through it, no matter what it is and how much it demands from you. So I think it's sound logic what she's doing.
Yeah, and you know, Tyson is a trendsetter. Exactly. Tyson got peanut butter. He went back into the game. I believe that Tyson shared some of his peanut butter with Parvati prior to leaving Extinction. So she knew the value of it. She knew that it would be a big jar too. Mm-hmm. So then they meditate. Amber comes in and Rob's like, "It's crunchy peanut butter." Amber, and they're just meditating. It's yum.
Legends. Yeah. These legends are dying for peanut butter.
All right. So back to the episode. We head over to the reward challenge. And it's going to be two teams. Jeremy and Kim were the two captains, which I thought was very fitting considering the current state of the game. They kind of feel like the two captains of the game. Not that they're opposing each other, but that they're the two that are kind of in on top, it seems. Kind of the most calling the shots, but it's very difficult to tell because we're not getting a ton of content from the actual strategy of the tribe. But Jeremy chooses Tyson, Adam, Tony, and Nick to be on his team. And then Kim is going to choose Sarah, Ben, Sophie, and Michelle. Denise not chosen to compete in the reward challenge, which definitely, you know, this has been talked about, but it was a little surprising.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand why. I mean, you're going to get the fish, carry the fish, and then puzzle the fish. I feel like Denise wouldn't have really brought you down here unless she's got like a cut on her leg or something that we don't know about that she couldn't really deal with. But also, since why have we stopped letting the person sitting out pick a side on bet on who's winning? Why?
I don't know.
Who's been, no one's losing or gaining anything from it except for Denise if she does the 50-50 right, which is a trend right now.
I guess like maybe it's like it's extra mean to not pick that person. It gives them even more of like a I'm on the outs maybe. But I don't think it just let them bet. It's more fun. Yeah.
I mean, it's an innocent choice if they win. It's like, oh, we don't have enough food. Like, that's not a thing. So I don't know. It was just, and like, there was nothing else there for Denise to look at or, you know, like a Michaela moment of like, oh, there's something tucked away under the seat. None of that. So it's like, okay, well, Denise is on the Sandra bench for now, and that's all fine. But yeah, so this was a challenge that went well along.
Yeah, she should also be able to bet fire tokens.
Ooh, okay, I don't know about that. In front of everybody? In front of everybody? That's scary. It's like she puts three down and then wins, has six now. Like, bye, Denise.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
And we're back. So let's get back to the show. All right. So yeah, they go through the challenge. Kim's team is going to take this one. I was not super surprised when I saw Sophie and Michelle on the puzzle. I was like, well, what does the other team have to compete against that? Jeremy and Nick. Sorry, guys, you're going to lose. And they did. So Kim's team wins. And Jeff is sending them off. Go enjoy your reward, guys. And Sarah says, hold up. Hold on. Can I give my reward away? And Jeff is like, sure. Yeah, sure. She's like, I would like to give my reward to Nick. Happy birthday, Nick. Here you go. Take my spot. And Jeff is like, wow, why are you doing this? Like, well, I would be miserable eating. And so I'd rather not be miserable and have him be miserable. So go be miserable, Nick. I was pretty surprised at this. I was like, what is she doing? Like, this is a move that a lot of people made in San Juan del Sur, as Jeremy will point out later. Yeah. And it just seems very transparent. And it's it doesn't seem like this is going to work out particularly well here for Sarah.
No, I think it was a big mistake. I mean, obviously, it all boils down to, if it was a decision that was made with emotions in the moment, if she really felt for him and felt bad and wanted him not to have a Rodney moment, I'm like, here, eat on your birthday, you know, get a full belly in you. Even that is a bad choice, but I would kind of get it. I genuinely don't think, or it shouldn't be in any way strategic, because now she's on the radar and you don't want to be on the radar. I feel like she's been doing really well not to be. So this was not good. It comes from, I assume, emotion. Again, still not good. You won the reward. You weren't even the captain. You weren't the puzzle maker. You were in the middle. So no one is going to look at you or blame you, or just eat. Just eat. Just have some food. You don't like Chinese food? That's fine. There's something for everybody. There's some meat there. There's some rice. Like, get some food in you, and don't bother with the other team. They had their chance. They lost. He was at the puzzle. He messed up. It's his own birthday problem, not yours.
Yeah. Kim, as Nick comes over, Kim says, welcome to the ladies team.
No, don't say it.
And Nick says, oh, I love the ladies.
Oh, I was hoping that would not be addressed. But yeah, that is a thing Nick said.
Who has talked already far too much about his crush on Parvati, is now gonna, oh, well, you know, I love the ladies. Put me on the ladies team.
Yeah, I love ladies and I love Chinese food.
Best of both worlds. Adam's going to come in and say, this was a mistake. Sarah came in with quite the reputation. She blindsided friends left and right. If this puts a target on her back, fine with me. I don't trust her as far as I can throw her. And I can't throw very far.
Yeah. Again, Sarah, given what we know, so right. So for us being from the other end of this scope, because we're not playing, we saw the preseason vote outs. A lot of people said Sarah, and then somehow forgot, and Sarah's here and Sarah's doing the thing. This puts her on radars, which is not a good thing for her at all, especially because I think she was situated especially well until this moment. Now, I don't know if this has impacted her a whole lot, but we'll see down the line. If she ends up being in trouble like 2 weeks from now, I'd be like, I will point back to this moment. I think this is what did it.
Yeah. So Sarah says this was a human decision on her part, not a strategic one, that she hopes it teaches everybody a lesson that as a world, people can be nicer to each other. And honestly, I buy this. I know that Rob and Steven were kind of debating back and forth whether or not this was a strategic move or an emotional move. If she's telling us in confessional, I buy it, because Sarah is not somebody that shies away from explaining cold-hearted things in her confessionals. I mean, Sarah preseason, like, I am the queen because I took out the queen. I am the best. I will cut anybody's throat. Like, she's not afraid. She's not the kind of player to sugarcoat things in confessionals. No. If this was a strategic move, I think she would tell us. I think she genuinely was not thinking this through, and probably was thinking more like I'm gonna moralize a little bit. I'm gonna be like, hey, we gotta be nice to people. But here's the thing: people don't like moralizing, but B, more importantly, the reason why this is like a potentially risky move to make, even if it's not strategy, even if it's not a winter season, like, people don't like to be confronted with something that makes them feel like they're a worse person, right? Like, when Sarah says, I would like to give up my reward for Nick, everybody else who has a reward now feels like, oh, should I have done that? Why didn't I think of that? And it makes them feel bad. And so they have incentive in themselves to look at it as a strategic move. You will see this happen on Survivor. It's happened plenty of times in the past, all the way back to the beginning. Anytime somebody does something outwardly and publicly kind, people will do their best to delegitimize the motivation behind it, because, well, the only reason I'm not doing nice things is because I'm not using it for strategy. Like, they're actually a worse person than me because I didn't do it and they did for strategy. And so, like, even on that very basic human level, this is going to make people around you feel not great, and they have incentive to sort of twist it against you.
Yeah. I mean, it's not only do people not want to feel like they don't want to feel bad and this is making them feel bad, but also no one really wants to look at someone who's on a high horse. So now if you're like, my whole thing is, it was a dumb decision, not so much like strategy or emotion. I do think it's more emotion leaning, because now if it ever keeps coming up and she keeps hammering home, like, no, I just wanted to be nice. I just wanted to show, you know, like, we can be nice people on their birthdays, you know, share the love, spread the love. It's like, well, stop preaching to me about being happy and spreading love in a game where I know you've done deceiving things before. I think you're capable of doing something like this. I've seen other people try and fail it. I've seen people do it and succeed. Like, so much more goes into the mind, especially when there's so much downtime, than to just be like, you know what? You're right. People should be nice and everyone should do the right thing and spread the love. I get where you're coming from. That's never going to end that way when you have so much time to think about it and everyone is your opponent.
Yeah. And I love the scene as well between Tony and Sarah, as Tony's, what did you do, man? What did you do? She's like, what do you mean? She's like, oh my God, why did you do that? And she's genuinely confused. She's like, what do you mean? I was just being a nice person. It's like, no, you can't do that. And I love Tony, like, describing how to play the game to Sarah. He tells us, hey, Sarah, she just got caught up in the moment. And the one moment is what costs you the game sometimes, when you can't get out of that emotional, realistic, humane moment to be that barbaric survivor player that you need to be. Then that's what can get you. You gotta stay in the right moment.
In the way he delivers it and the way he reacts to it is so goofy, but the message is 100% accurate and very sound. But when Tony delivers things, this was like, there were three different moments on the episode where Tony is delivering a matter of fact thing to somebody, and he's kind of young grasshoppering them, but in a very like silly, like talking way, like, tell it to me like I'm five way. And it's so funny because what he's saying is 100% right. And this is 100% something that could unhinge Sarah moving forward. Little does she know. But he just says it in this Tony way, and it's disarming and it's fun for us. It's just, it's the whole package. Tony is the whole package. We haven't talked about him yet, but the fact that we are the second episode of the Merge in and Tony is still here and still going for the crown is insane, Taryn.
It's fantastic. And I
love it.
This is really funny watching him describe, because like Tony is like, you know, Tony who at times in his original season came off a little unaware socially, even though he was so good. Like he kind of felt like he was blustering around a bit. As Michelle might say, at the top of the episode that he was a little bit fumbling around a little bit sometimes. And then this Tony is so socially adept. Like he recognizes what he needs to do. He, I think, is the most aware of, I think, what is the most valuable strategy on an All-Star season, which is what he has coined, the lions versus the hyenas. Mm-hmm. And he is not only recognizing that Sarah did something that has put her in some hot water, but also recognizing that him even saying to her that she made a mistake could make her angry at him. And so he's very careful in this conversation. So I think, look, I'm not trying to lecture you. I'm not trying to say anything. I think that other people might see this in a certain way and that we need to be careful. And like seeing Tony be that careful is so funny to me. Just like it's such a weird contrast of like concepts.
It's so funny remembering his one big moment of Game Changers being, you do nice, I'm going to go look for the idol. And now here he is years later doing the nice and doing it well in a way where he's not offending the person he's trying to actually help. And he's using this in a way that is honestly helping him stay in and stay afloat. And he's not doing the opposite of the nice, which is what he was doing before. This is incredible. This is an arc that I didn't think I was going to see at all. And here we are being given the gift of Tony week in, week out. Team TV.
Yes. So everybody else agrees this was all game. Of course it was game. It's that Sarah made a just game decision. So Jeremy tells us that he's done this before. And you know what they did? They voted him out right after. Nick says, I appreciate it, but I don't know or anything. I don't trust her at all. I saw her season. it's not going to work. So they head out to the reward. They check for clues, but there aren't any. The only thing there are some fortune cookies. And so they've got to open up their fortune cookies. This is what we hear for the fortune cookie. We hear Ben's, Kim's, and then Michelle's. Ben's fortune is, your skill will accomplish what the force of many others cannot. It was interesting. Mm-hmm. Because many people would see Ben's win as a force rather than a skill win, right?
True.
Kim's was, you will make changes for the better. It's like super generic. I thought she was lying, honestly.
So when she pronounced it a little bit closer to butter. And I thought, did you do this on the fly? Are you sitting on an advantage and you're not telling anybody? But obviously we would have seen that if it was. Better does make sense. I was just convinced it was a pun and I was not convinced that it was true.
So all of a sudden she's Otev from the butter Otev. So then Michelle has two that she reads out loud. As the purse is emptied, the heart is filled. And she's, I love this one. And then she gets, don't be afraid to take that big step. These two fortunes are really pushing her toward what we then see, the 50-50 advantage. She opens it up. She finds out it can be used until final seven only. So that's only four more tribals, right? You're at 11 now and you had 10, 9, and 8. So it's five more tribals, four after this next one.
Yes.
So she has this and she says, well, let me just see how it works here. This 50-50 coin. Let me just see. She flips it. Oh, it's safe. I wonder how many times I can get safe. Oh, not safe. Well, there you go. 50-50. Living up to the name, I guess. She's testing out the coin. This was great.
Yeah, this is good. It's good times. It's good times. I ultimately want to talk. I mean, I know we're going to, but right off the bat, what do you think of Michelle accepting this? Because I left the episode thinking one way, and then my mentions were growing the other way. So I'm intrigued on where you stand on it.
I'm intrigued on where you were and where you went to. I can tell you that from my point of view, I thought about it. And I think that ultimately she has to take the deal. And that's because from what we've seen so far, unless the fire tokens get used in some other way, it seems like the most value you can get from your fire tokens is from advantages being sent to you, sold to you from Extinction, right? And so if Michelle turns down the offer, she says, no, I don't want this advantage. I have 4 tokens. I don't want to spend all my tokens. I don't want this one. Then Parvati is going to be stuck with a useless advantage that she now, I imagine, can't sell to anybody else. Just didn't go anywhere. And nobody else on Extinction is ever going to risk sending an advantage to Michelle because they're going to be worried that she might turn down the offer. So I think she has to take what she gets, no matter how much it costs and no matter what it is. She kind of has to, because if she turns it down, she's never going to get sold anything. Like, people are going to be like, all right, well, Michelle has 4, but Nick has 3, and Michelle already turned one down, so let's just sell one to Nick and hope that we get Nick's 3 tokens. So I feel like that alone says that she just has to.
Yeah, see, I hadn't thought of it from the angle of how they would receive it in that way. So basically, for me, it was like, well, turn it down because it's 4 tokens. The menu could update again because it already has once. That's definitely possible. But also, they know that you have 4 tokens. They know you're the richest. You know that's why you got asked, you know, you got offered. So maybe they'll send you something else because everyone wants to try and get the 4 tokens. Maybe you get the juicier deal. However, I did not even take into consideration of that spooks them into sending her anything again, because now the longer they don't have any food, the more desperate they are to just get a sale and start getting some tokens to get the food. So had I looked at it that way, I do see that now. Also, the arguments that I saw in my mentions were also, she doesn't know any better. What else could she get? She doesn't know that there were other advantages, what those advantages were. So for all she knows, this is the best that, you know, the Edge of Extinction is going to offer her. So that makes sense. So yeah, ultimately, I came in being like, that was stupid, because I also didn't like the advantage. But as you're being given something, just take it. Just take the deal, because you don't know. You might not get anything else. It's like being at the auction and not bidding, waiting for something, and then auction ends, right? So,
yeah. Plus, she was just on the wrong side of a vote. She's one of 3 people on the out, so she probably needs something. From what we've seen, the advantages being sold are getting progressively worse as the season goes on, starting with an idol, then going to safety without power, steal a vote, now, you know, half, now 50-50 safety. Like, it's essentially, this is like 50% worse than what Jeremy got. It feels like the longer you wait, the less valuable your tokens become. And again, that could change, but you don't know if it's going to change. So yeah, I feel you have to take it. And then, you know, just try to get more tokens and then see where you can go from there. Because if you buy this for 4 tokens, then Nick gets voted out, gives you 3 more. Now they know you have 3 more tokens and you're willing to spend all your tokens on things. They're probably going to send you another advantage the next time they win. Yeah,
she did talk about being the richest. Maybe that was a premonition of, hey, she's going to be the richest because she's going to purchase everything because she's going to keep getting tokens given to her on the way out.
So, yeah. All right. So she's the fortune cookies have pointed me toward taking this power. She needs some god darn power in this game. I don't think I've ever heard god darn in my entire life.
No, well, this is the season where we're learning new ways to exclaim emotion. Ben has given us a couple, and now we got this one.
I was just like, you were like halfway there. It reminded me a lot of a Big Brother Canada moment where Chris censored the wrong word as he was.
Oh, bleep of S.
Yes. This that bleep of S. Except he didn't say S. No. He bleeped out peace. So Michelle's gonna you know, go darn on one side, but not gosh on the other, I guess. She takes the power. She gets the god darn power in the game. And then we head to the immunity challenge.
That's
and
right.
This one, they're going to be standing on the little little triangle platforms, and they just get progressively harder as we go. There were a lot of complaints about the song in this episode that I saw on Twitter. Lots of talk about the song, and the first time I heard the song in the episode, I was like, people are overreacting. The song is fine. Let the song be the song. It's nice to have a change of pace in the kinds of, you know, music that we get. I like it. I feel like I'm watching Peaky Blinders. It's like, modern music on a, you know, where it shouldn't be. It's like, it's cool. But when I heard the song at the immunity challenge, I was like, okay. All right. I still maintain that You Better Watch Out is fine. But here's the song. We got a new portion of the song in the immunity challenge. And this portion of the song is Winners at War, Hungry for More, Winners at War. Oh, it's Winners at War. We're hungry for more. Winners at War. They're coming for you.
Who wrote these lyrics? Because this is the most elementary lyric writing I've ever seen. I initially also felt, I was like, wait, this doesn't belong here, but also it's not worth my outrage. It's like, meh, whatever. It's stupid, but like, it was a one-timer. But now it's just, it's so out of place and it doesn't make sense. I feel like it's inserted in the wrong times. Like, it's not even in the right place. Like, what you just mentioned, like the whole, like, The Great Gatsby movie had a little bit of like some of the soundtrack had a little bit of a hip hop thing to it. It worked. But this is like if you put this in the middle of The Godfather, where like that soundtrack is for that specifically and it fits there. This does not. It's like putting a square peg into a round hole. It doesn't really fit. I get that the lyrics are talking about this season, but it's just not, it's not worth it because. Like, it's not like a big artist did this for us so that we can credit them and like get some more marketing. They can retweet, hey, I did this for Survivor this season. It's someone who we don't even, it's no name. It's some anonymous person off Fiverr who was commissioned to do what we can assume at this point to be 3 minutes of music that's been spliced into 10 different sound bites that are going to get thrown into the season.
Yeah, the rhyming Winners at War with Hungry for More is just, I'm sorry, but that is not okay.
No.
And
criminal.
So, it feels to me, it feels to me like I said on a podcast a few weeks ago that on American Ninja Warrior, they always play the song when the person is going to make it and they win the thing. Right. And so I was like, when they played that song under Michelle, when she goes to tribal and then they eventually vote out Yule, I was like, that's some big winner stuff right there. No. And it almost felt like they heard that. And then they were like, crap, we got to put the song in more places so that it's not so obvious. And so now they're just kind of throwing it into places randomly. Like, see, no, it means nothing. We didn't give anything away.
So we didn't talk about this because there was another lyric that was tucked away in the reward challenge that was calm before the storm, be ready for the thunder. And this happened. In between the Edge of Extinction and the reward challenge happening. So you are right. It is being put in weird places because then this big lyric that we just talked about comes up. And then what happens? It's not even at the penultimate moment. It's right before round three starts, where in round two people fell off and that was it. It's not even in like a big moment or like a moment worthy of the song.
It was that Jeff said like, this is Winners at War, guys. And then the song was like, it's Winners at War. We're hungry for more. It's Winners at War.
It doesn't even bring like pump in the song. Like Survivor AU has like a Michael Bay type sound effect thing to it where like every now and then you hear brrr. That's not even this. This is just a weird jam that's in the middle of this.
All right. So we eventually get more people falling off of the thing. And then we get Jeremy trying his best. And I pointed this out on Twitter. People did not think it was as funny as I thought it was. But I really like, look, guys, I'm reading into these things. I'm paying attention to the details. This is why you listen to this podcast. Clearly, Jeremy was trying to secretly communicate to Tony in Llama during this challenge. He was, he was trying to let Tony know, hey, I'm throwing this one because I feel safe with you. He was trying to make some communication happen right there. And so that's what was going on. That's what's going on. Yeah.
Jeremy's playing four-dimensional chess and being super meta is what you're telling me.
Yes.
Wouldn't be shocked. I mean, I was laughing for the physical comedy of it all. And apparently the people waiting behind Jeff who heard him take a fall were also in tickles over it. So Jeremy is giving us comedy. Now, whether it's as specific as you're putting it or just general is yet to be seen, but I'm open to both.
I'm telling you, just wait. One of these tribals, Jeremy's going to go like, whoa! And Tony's going to be like, oh no. So just wait. So we get to Kim versus Ben at the end, and Kim is going to win and get a fire token. This is Kim's fifth immunity win in her career as a Survivor player, which I believe now puts her at the top of the female immunity winners with five over the next four.
That's right. And once again, Kim comes in, big bullseye on her, and she keeps shattering ceilings that people don't expect her to get to because no one really had much faith in her making it this far. So look at Kim go, silently but surely making her way. Ben also had a good piece of comedy in this. I liked the weird, like the queen's hand that he was holding up that kind of looked like a half a karate chop. And like it was enough for him to stay stable throughout. It was really weird that it was working out the way it did.
Yeah. All right. Well, we get to the strategizing portion of the episode. Kim tells us that she now has the necklace. That's great. But this should be an easy one here. The easy thing, she says, is sticking with this larger group of people and splitting the vote, and that she wants Nick to be the one to go. He's a bit more of a challenge threat, and she feels like he's one of these easy votes. And so when Kim says the larger group of people, it's pretty clear to me, at least it seems clear, that she means herself, Jeremy, Tony, Sarah, Tyson, Ben, Denise, and Sophie, which were the people that carried the vote in the previous episode. And so it's those eight people, and then on the outs are Adam, Nick, and Michelle. It seems like that is the structure of the game right now, with some hints that the next episode is going to be when this big group splits up. So, you know, who knows? But honestly, it doesn't seem that unlikely at this point. But within this group, I'm very curious to sort of parse out, like, where is the power? Who is working with who? And it feels to me like we have Ben, Sarah, and Tony as kind of a trio, right? Like Tony and Sarah are Cops Are Us. And then as we all abundantly know now, Ben and Sarah are very close. And we know that Ben has been working pretty closely with Tony, part of the like big targets crew. So I think those three seem to be working pretty closely together. I would imagine that Sophie is attached to them as well, considering her connection to Sarah really being the glue that holds all of those people together, if they are together. I don't even know if there are like official things yet, but it does seem like that is one kind of group on that side. And on the other side, it seems like it's Jeremy and Kim working very closely together. Tyson maybe in there with them. I'll talk about that a little bit later. And then Denise as well, in there a little bit, but I feel like Tyson and Denise, not quite as on the inside as Jeremy and Kim, that they seem to be the tightest. Although, you know, you never know exactly with Tyson. It did seem like Tyson had a pretty good bond with Kim, that they flipped the vote together later on. So, but it seems like this group of eight is kind of split in the middle between these two groups, Ben, Sarah, Tony, Sophie, Jeremy, Kim, Tyson, Denise, but they're not very solid groups. And you do kind of have the, you know, Tyson, Sophie, and Denise in particular seem like they don't have like really tight connections with the people in the groups necessarily. So that puts them like on the outs, but at the same time, if there's a coming war, it also gives them the most options because they're most in the middle. And so I'm very curious to see where this goes once this starts to break up.
Yes. And as far as the breakdowns go, I pretty much see them similarly. I will say earlier in the season, we did see Sarah and Tyson getting on well. Mm. So maybe they're not aligned strategically or numerically, but I think they've got enough of a good rapport that I could see both sides trying to help each other out at some point, or even within the divides right now. I also do see Denise as in the majority, but probably once, if hypothetically this goes exactly how the majority wants and they're down to them as the eight, I think Denise is the first one out the door by the looks of it, just based on the connections and how everything's set up. But I do think that Sarah is probably a very key cog in all this, because we'll get to it. Once her name comes up is pretty much when I think everything turns on its head this episode.
Yes. And I do think there's also like this other group of like big target thing people, right? And so like that could theoretically be what carries it as well, where that would probably be like Jeremy, Ben, Tony, Tyson, like those four guys seem to have talked a lot. We saw them talking last episode about Wendell minus Tyson, at least, which was Jeremy, Tony, and Ben. So Jeremy certainly has connections with that group over there. Tyson does as well, seem to have, you know, connections back and forth. Sophie, I imagine, has some amount of connection back and forth as well with Sarah and also Kim, but I don't know how strong her relationship with Kim is at this point. We've seen so little from Sophie lately, especially when it comes to like who she's working with and where her loyalties lie. It seemed like Adam really trusted Sophie. He kept going to her, you know, in the previous episode and then in this episode later on, he went to her a lot. So losing Adam was probably not great for Sophie in terms of like having people in the game. But yeah, it seems like I agree. Denise seems to be the most on the outs. I would say Tyson is in there with some connections. Jeremy in there with some connections. Kim, I imagine. And then obviously, you know, Tony has the tightest crew with Sarah and Ben, but also has connections. So it's really all over the place. I feel like it's probably it might just seem that way because we know so little about it. But I think there's a lot of like interlocking pieces here, and this could really go a ton of different ways.
Yeah, it's just seemingly very fluid. Again, we're not being shown enough strategically to be able to pinpoint. But the ones I am most willing to put fire tokens on is that Sarah and Tony are very good together. And then Ben and Sophie are in there in a song. I can't specifically say which way they're connected very well. And then on the other side, you got Jeremy and Kim very well connected to each other. But then Kim and Denise also seem to be having something going on. And I gotta imagine Michelle is somewhere in Jeremy's plans. It's just not being spoken to us, given how close they have played for so long. I think that he's just keeping hush about that because she's on the outs. He doesn't want to end up on the outs. Potentially, I could see that being a thing. So, and I definitely could see a reshuffle happen as early as next week. And we don't just stick to this majority that we know at the moment. It just seems very fluid to me because, again, Tyson's someone who is not on the side that I thought he was going to be on. So he's a little bit somewhere. Tony is talking about the big names with all the boys. So this could go any which way. And I guess that's the one silver lining of all this, is that because we haven't been shown the strategic side of things, it's keeping me on my toes and it's keeping me excited for what's coming and how things are going to go and who's going to fall on which side.
Yeah. And I have been very impressed with Tyson in terms of like getting back in, and that again, that might be misplaced. I could easily see Tyson going home in the next episode.
Absolutely.
I actually feel like that is probably one of his biggest danger points before making it to the end, is the next episode, especially because we've gotten some hints that we might see some family stuff in the next episode. And I could really see his entire story be culminating in the family visit. But I've been very impressed with the fact that he seems to be integrating himself very well into a spot where he was not able to make those connections. And if these winners are at all savvy, which they are, then they have to recognize that if Tyson makes it to the end, he wins. Period. End of story. Not only did he have the time on Extinction with everyone to bond with them, but those are also just his friends in general who would vote for him anyway, in any circumstance. Plus, he's just a very likable guy to begin with. You cannot let Tyson get anywhere near the end because he's also great at challenges. I have to imagine that they're very concerned about that. So the fact that Tyson has managed to integrate himself as well as he seems to have so far, I'm very impressed. But again, that could easily shift in the next, episode or so.
A couple of things here. I think coming into the season, I was skeptical on a person returning from the edge winning, because I was like, no, these are all winners. Of course, they're not going to do that. They saw how much people talked down on that happening. But first of all, everyone knows each other, right? This is a season of well-knowns. This is a season of, yeah, these are the old school people. These are people that he was working with. These are people that he's been spending time with, all that stuff that happens on a regular Edge of Extinction. But then comes, about 10, 12 years of friendships that have been forming here, that have been culminating here. So that's something to consider. Also, I would like to just say that the fact that this season, we didn't give the person returning an idol and he's standing here not needing an idol, just working his game, working his magic. I want that to be on the record because that is a very important thing to be there. I'm very happy that it's not here. It gives me hope that should another returnee come in closer to the end, they're not going to give them an idol. And that would be the ideal way for that to shake down. I also do think that Tyson is lucky that there was some other stuff going on, and I could very much see him out either next tribal or the one after, because it's one of those things that it will come back to the front of mind of all his friends are sitting there right now and they're watching him come in every tribal and they're like smiling at him. That's something. I can't just let that be there no matter what. So once everyone kind of the fluidity stops and everyone realizes where they lie, that's probably when the dust settles and they decide on Tyson's fate.
Yes. Speaking of, giving the returning players idols, last episode of this podcast, I talked about when I read the advantage menu, when you could buy an advantage, buy an idol, essentially, if you get back into the game. And what I said was that it said that you get to keep it even if you don't get back into the game. But the chat was like, no. There was an interview with Jeff Probst. And he said that is not the case, that idols are done when you enter the game. And I was like, okay. I guess, Jeff is probably right about this one. Jeff has since issued a retraction that I was right and Jeff Probst was wrong. Jeff says in his newest interview, "I'm sorry, I got that one wrong. The idols are still valid if they make it back into the game. They do not lose their idols if they don't make it back into the game in the first challenge." So Natalie and Boston Rob do still have hidden immunity idols in their possession if they make it back into the game.
I would just like to say that I will be the first person to buy the t-shirt you make eventually that says, "I was right, Jeff was wrong." I think that would be a good one. That'd be a hot commodity. That was a smart choice on your part.
Yeah, it was very shocking because I really felt like I had done the research on that one. I paused on the thing and I was like, it felt like I had this right. And then Jeff was saying the opposite. And I was very confused. It threw me off on the whole podcast. I was like, I'm so confused. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. I can't trust my own reading comprehension. So I was very pleased.
I mean, that also is scary because now if one of them come back in, whenever they come back in, they got a juicy idol to chill with as well. So that's you know, pause for a little bit of the scare. But I mean, now it makes more sense why they would spend money on it. Because if it was like a gamble, if it's a 50-50 coin again, it's like, well, if you are 1 second behind Tyson and you're out, you're beating yourself up about it, and you don't have an idol to fall back on if you ever have a chance of going back in. No. So, makes sense.
Yes. Speaking of this, all this extinction stuff, Puya, I did see some people in the chat talk about this as well. And I wonder if this is going to be a topic, every single episode until the end. Because I do think that Tyson still looks pretty good in the game, fairly solid. I asked this question last week, but Puya, I'm curious about your thoughts. How do you feel about the potential of Tyson winning the game? How would that make you feel?
This is hard because, like I said, preseason, I was like, no, they won't do it. It doesn't make, like, there's no way they watch the season. But then also I was like, no, he shouldn't. He was out. It's out. This is the second season we're having this, right? Game mechanics are involved. This is not part of the game. I got to accept that. And then it sucks to say, but it depends on the player coming back in and what they do with that chance. Right. And it's hard for me to say because it's a very conflicting feeling because I love Tyson and I would have said probably no, they shouldn't have a chance to win. If it's someone that has no agency coming in, if there's someone that's not digging themselves out of tough situations, that's not actually playing the game. But I've seen Tyson play before. I know he plays the game. I know he gives it his all. I know he just doesn't, like, you know, slide his way over. He does what he needs to do. He's a big target. He definitely has to work a lot to get to the end, to have a chance. He has to avoid getting voted out so many times before he can do it. So for him to sit at the end, he is going to have to do a lot. He almost has to pull a miracle to get there. So if he articulates it and the jury feels like, yes, worthy, then yes, he should win. Now, obviously, we fall back on the earlier argument of these are his friends. These are his friends. So if he's at the end and he's done nothing to show for it, but his friends are just going to give him the W, then I'm a little bit more conflicted. So it is always going to be a matter of, did you do enough to get the crown? Because yeah, he could just get there and be, you know, rewarded on the merit of I've been to this person's, you know, event. I've played poker with this one. I've hung out with this one. This one and me FaceTime every Tuesday. Like then that stuff is a little bit like it's souring, you know, especially on a season like this with the caliber of, you know, the prize money and the legacy and the title that goes with it. It's a lot. I feel like I've been saying all this to also make my decision on the fly, and I could see it and I think I could accept it. But then for it to be the purest, I'll say no, even though it hurts me because I love Tyson. So I'll say no, but I can see it go both ways. And I have, honestly, I can see pros or cons either way. I'm no longer a strict no, though. Mm-hmm. I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this, regardless of your stance on the Tyson situation, I think everyone can agree that the players in the game would be insane to let Tyson get to the end. If they think they can beat Tyson in a jury vote, they are out of their minds. And right now, like Tyson, like even like letting Tyson get any kind of power in the game, like numbers wise, like, I mean, he has to be put in quarantine, like, is social distance yourself from Tyson because you cannot let him get anywhere near the end. And so if he makes it there, I have to imagine he's done some pretty impressive stuff to get there. Although we'll have to wait and see. I'm seeing back and forth responses in the chat. It seems to be a very divisive topic. I wonder if I should put it in the winner legacy survey each week to see if it shifts at all as we go. Because for me, it is a case by case basis. I think that. Yeah. Like it is with any player that I watch. And so, based on what I've seen so far, I wouldn't be upset with Tyson, taking the win. But there's still a long way to go. And if he's even more impressive, then I could be excited for a Tyson win. If he plays a masterful game, to get to the end when he absolutely shouldn't be allowed to. If he ends up just like challenging himself down to the end, then that's another different story. So, yeah. We'll have to wait and see here. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to, Nick Adam and Michelle, those are the people on the outs, and they are the options. And so there's an early conversation here where they're talking about Nick and Adam splitting the votes between the two of them. But Ben suggests, what about Michelle? How about Michelle is the other option instead of Adam? And Ben is later going to claim that he has Adam's back, which felt like a lie to me, but he did actually, you know, turn the votes away from Adam in this moment. So there's at least something there.
At least this is my favorite couple of the season was the Nick and not Nick, sorry, Ben and Adam. The Ben and Adam has been a lot of fun to see. It's been it's been a good spot for comic relief, and their bickering is second to none. They've really provided a lot. Being two characters that I was really not too keen on seeing this season. I've definitely changed my tune, and I had a lot of fun watching them. And I do stand with Ben did not really sell Adam down the river to that extent that Adam may have. So.
Well, Nick tells us that he is going to take the game over. He's tired of being told what to do. He's tired of his name being thrown out as an easy vote. More chaos is good for him. And so he wants more and more people turning on each other. And so then we get a quick little montage of he goes to Tyson and tells Tyson that Sophie has thrown his name out. We don't get any clarification on this. It would not surprise me if this was true. If Nick was not just making this up, he was just spouting true information about Sophie being after Tyson. Because, like I said, it's probably a great idea for Sophie to take out Tyson. Tyson shouldn't be allowed anywhere. It shouldn't be allowed to get any kind of traction in the game. Plus, as we mentioned before, Tyson is one of these people right now who could go in between the two, any of the groups. Tyson has an in on any kind of group that forms, and therefore is in that nice little swing spot that Sophie probably would prefer to be in. And so if Sophie takes out Tyson, then she's probably in a better spot to move around. And so I'm very curious to know if this was real, because we barely heard anything from Sophie in this episode. And I really want to know if she was actually targeting Tyson.
I mean, so
it's a weird name to just randomly come up with. Sophie saying Tyson. It's a weird name for Nick to throw out there if it wasn't true.
Right. And, you know, given the season we're talking, so he knows he's part of the outs. You know, he knows he's got about like a third of a chance, or like he's one out of three people or one out of two people that is being brought up to go again here. Does he? I have to assume that this is founded on something plausible, even if it is a tiny shred of plausibility to it. That's what he's using. If it can't be random and out of thin air with nothing to back it up, because then all it takes is for Tyson to do the thing of going directly to Sophie and be like, hey, Sophie, did you say this? No. What the hell? Who told you? Nick, let's just get rid of him. Boom. All his dreams are over. And now he goes from having a chance of 50-50, maybe staying, to nothing. Or if Tyson takes it to Sophie and then there's a little bit of awkwardness there, that opens the door up. So I think going off of that, winners at war, you're all winners, assuming you know what's good. I have to assume there's at least a shred of something truth here for him to do this. Otherwise, it seems stupid to do it.
Yeah, and later in the episode, later in this montage, we're going to hear Tyson's name come up a few times, and it made me wonder if perhaps, you know, again, some time shifting in the editing, that maybe when Tyson's name was brought up, Sophie was involved, and that went to Nick, which went to Tyson, and so on and so forth. But either way, we then see Tyson approach Jeremy with Nick and Adam present, and they talk about targeting Sophie. And, you know, with Nick and Adam both there, it's very hard to know if this was ever even remotely possible that they would go Sophie, if Jeremy was actually down for it. But they talk about Sophie, but Adam says, I would rather do Sarah. And it's actually Jeremy that suggests Sarah to Adam. But Adam says, 1,000%. I would absolutely do that. She's too close to Ben. And just immediately I was like, well, yeah, she's close to Ben. Wait a minute. She's too close to Ben? Where is Tony? Why is Tony's name not coming? Too close to Ben? Cops R Us Sarah is too close to Ben and not too close to Tony. I don't know what they've done to keep this alliance a secret, but I have no idea why Ben is the concern here, that it's Ben and Sarah that are too close.
They've only ever played on multiple seasons when each other are on the cast. Three times. Each have played three times, and each time Sarah and Tony have been on the beach together. Maybe on different tribes, but together. So it's baffling that that's not the name that comes up. It's baffling that Tony is essentially in a spy shack in clear sight, if that makes sense, because surprisingly, his name is silent. Nothing is coming up. I think, so to quickly step back to the Tyson thing that you brought up, I think Tyson's name has probably been circulating for sure, because we did see it here and there. I think it goes back to like Tyson has a confessional where he talks about he doesn't like unpredictability and chaos. And that is very true for Tyson. He is a more predictable person and less wild cardy. So right now, if I'm looking at the game board and the pieces, it's like, yeah, they're looking at the wild cards. The wild cards, the unpredictable ones, that I don't know where you're going to go next, are the ones that are being looked at. So maybe Tyson is being kept for a rainy day kind of situation.
Yeah. And this idea of like chaos, again, it seemed to have, it came from Nick first, and then we hear it from Tyson. I mean, Nick, who approaches things from more of a Big Brother standpoint, than Survivor sometimes, this is a classic Big Brother strategy of when you're on the bottom, when you're on the outs, cause as much chaos as you can. And obviously that people do that in Survivor, and it's a Survivor thing, but it's something that happens a lot more in Big Brother because of the structure of how Big Brother works. But it can be applied to Survivor in a similar way, and we've seen that plenty of times in Survivor, like I said. But I like seeing the sort of connections here with Nick, and the way he plays, and like what is successful that he sometimes brings from Big Brother to Survivor. I thought that was interesting. So they agree on Sarah, that Tyson, Jeremy, Adam, Nick, and then Michelle joins them, and they agree on Sarah. And that seems to have actually been a plan at some point, because they talk about changing the plan from that. So it seems like Jeremy is willing to go with this, potentially, at least. Denise is then going to talk to Kim and says, there's a plan to get out Sarah, because Denise is on board. Like, she says, there's one group that wants to do this, there's another group that wants to do Sarah. Would you go Sarah? And Kim does the thing where she clearly does not want to do this, but she has to, like, you have to like stall for time in order to like work up to the lie, right? She's like, what? Man, my mind is blown. And then she's, but okay, yeah, I'm down. I'm fine with it if that's the plan.
That meme. So remember the meme where it's a guy walking with his girlfriend, but then he's looking back and looking at the other thing. The other thing for Kim is options. Kim never wants to settle. There's always more fish in the sea. There's always more things to look at. I imagine Kim is the hardest person to go to a restaurant with because she can't decide what she wants. And I love that because I'm like that. I have a hard time deciding too. But Kim thrives when there's other things to do and there's other decisions to be made. And she, I thought, played this really well, because I feel like she sold it completely. I think Denise full on bought that she was going that way. I think everyone else full on bought that she was cool with the choice that was given, until boom, next scene, we hear her say something else that is not what this was.
Yes, she says, okay, I'm fine with it if that's the plan. Cut to Kim says to Tyson, not Sarah.
No.
And this, I thought, was very telling, right? Because she does not feel comfortable telling Denise how she really feels about the plan. She seemingly does feel comfortable telling Tyson about her genuine feelings that I do not want Sarah to go. They spent time on the outs together on Original DeCall. Maybe that is still in play. Maybe he is in really good with her and Jeremy. They are going to come to the same conclusion, and want Adam out here. But it does seem like Tyson is in pretty decently with Kim so far. I thought it was interesting that Kim did not want to go after Sarah at this point in time, especially considering what I said before, where Sarah really is kind of the glue that holds a lot of different people together that are not Kim. So I actually feel like Sarah leaving might have been not terrible for Kim necessarily. But at the same time, the second you get one big target out, the whole thing starts rolling. And she is one of those big targets. So, you know, it's, I do see the argument both ways here, but again, just trying to read into like what this means, it definitely says to me that Denise still seems to be very much on the outs of things, that every time she's in a conversation, it's like a one-on-one conversation where somebody's not really telling her the full truth all the time. And it's usually they're talking to her about a plan that doesn't go through. So I definitely feel like, you know, Denise, who should be very close with Kim, should be very close with Jeremy, seemingly not really the person that they're confiding in a lot.
No, and this is a shame because Denise was my preseason winner pick and I love Denise. However, I honestly, you know, it ultimately goes back to Denise's big stamp on the game, big move on the game. That night, she had everyone else voted her. She had an idol. She played it on Jeremy and took out Sandra. So now she's looked at as a bit of a wild card, not quite trustworthy. And if you're Kim, ultimately, she is saying, I'm with you. She has said this to you, to your face multiple times, but you can't help but remember she played an idol for Jeremy. Ergo, I will never be her number one, truly, because Jeremy's kind of there. And also, no one really trusts her, so I don't want to give her ammo that blows up in my face because she could use it against me, just like she did with Sandra. Versus Tyson just comes back in the game. Big threat, big, big threat. He's already been out once. He needs somebody to love. He can love me. I can work with him. We can maybe work like maybe they're doing like a middle thing. But also ultimately, I could see Tyson always going before her if they are ever targeted as a pair, because Tyson has all those friends, lovely friends at the jury. So this is kind of a situation with Kim where I think she's riding the middle of these two kind of well, and other people kind of well, because she has all of them. But where her trust truly lies, where she's willing to give more accurate information and depictions of how she feels, currently lies with Tyson. And for the reasons I just mentioned, I think that's why that's happening.
Yeah. So they have this conversation. Tyson says, they came to me and Adam was the only one who could convince everybody to go in the Sarah direction. So I'm thinking that if Adam has that type of power to be able to control people like that and put his foot down and people listen, we should flop it all on him. And so he tells us that they had agreed to Sarah. So he's telling in confessional, he's saying that the Sarah thing seemed to be genuine, but he thinks that Adam is more dangerous as a player. So he thinks, okay, I've got to do something. And so then we see Tyson and Kim approach Jeremy, which again points to them as a kind of trio here, to some extent at least. And this is Jeremy on the same bench. Sure. That he was at before, just chilling. And they're like, okay, we're changing the vote. He goes, are you? He says, we need to flip it on Adam. And Jeremy's just like, what the hell is going on? So here we go. This seems to be, Tyson seems to get the credit for this, Tyson wants it on Adam. If it wasn't on Adam, it might have been on Sarah. If it wasn't on Sarah, it might have been on Nick. But instead, it seems that Tyson is pushing it in the direction of Adam, and his reason is that he sees Adam as a more dangerous player, which is interesting. I think that for Tyson especially, he's completely correct, right? Like, Adam is way more dangerous to Tyson than Sarah or Nick are. Adam, who, as we see, is willing to just go full force and never give up. Sarah, who is a big target, and like, if Sarah leaves, that seemingly, to my eyes, benefits like Kim and Jeremy, where they get more control, and that's not good for Tyson, because the more control they have, the less they need him. And so if he takes out like wildcard Adam, leaving in scary group, Tony, Sarah, Ben, you still got the pair over here, Nick and Michelle, that he could potentially pick up. Whereas Adam is much harder to pick up as a person like that. And then you still have all of your ties with, you know, Ben and Tony and Jeremy and Kim and all of that. I feel like it's a much better position. So I actually really like this move by Tyson, and he seemingly is able to execute it in a pretty a decently effective way, depending on how much of this chaos we see is manufactured or happened before or whatever. But ultimately, I agree with the move here from Tyson. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, it's flawless for him because, like, again, he talks about not liking unpredictable, and Adam has shown to be very unpredictable, especially this season. And I'm sure he's sitting on the edge getting retells of all the stuff that's been going on. So, yeah, some could look at it and be like, well, isn't Adam priming himself up to be a losing finalist? Wouldn't that be a good situation for Tyson as a returning person from the edge to sit next to? Maybe. But also in the same breath, we're looking at the scene where Tyson looks at it and is like, hey, Adam, at least for a hot second, seems to have flipped it onto Sarah. So what's more worse than a wild card to Tyson? A wild card with a messiah kick. A wild card who can maybe every once in a while work a vote and make it happen. Because typically, if a wild card is just going to, all they do is you're in jeopardy of not having their vote go your way, that's bad. But then not only if their vote, but also they can collect like three more votes to do a move that will be detriment to you. You don't want that. You don't want that at all. So, and for Tyson, we've talked about it. For him to get to the end, he has to pull a miracle anyways. So he can't even sit there and think about, well, no, this, if I'm at the end with this person, I have a better shot at winning. I need to get to the end. That's what I need to do as someone who's already been voted out. So that doesn't even register for me. I need to get out the crazy people that A, I don't know where they lie, but also B, could the drop of a hat take me out or go after me and have people behind them.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, Tyson is the biggest jury threat on the island right now. That, like, I think that Tyson has the best chance of beating anybody else that sits next to him in the finals. You know, you certainly have people like Jeremy and Kim and Tony, who probably would also be really, really hard to beat. But if anybody can beat them, I think it's Tyson. Tyson, by himself, even without having spent time bonding on Extinction, I think would have a really, would have one of the best chances of winning a jury vote. But his time on Extinction, plus the fact that he has friends on Extinction, those friends have now formed like an Extinction alliance where they share peanut butter together. He currently has, I like guarantee you, 6 of 8 votes in the jury currently sitting on Extinction. You know, if Tyson gets there, I don't think he's unbeatable, but I think he has the best chance of winning. Therefore, Tyson should be the person least concerned about jury threats and who's easy to beat in the end. And in fact, he should be taking out the people who are easiest to beat in the end, because if Adam's there and Tyson is there toward the end, you're going to be like, well, of course I'm keeping Adam around. He can't win in the end nearly as well as Tyson might be able to. If Tyson is sitting there with other big threats who are also hard to beat in the end, he has a much better chance of getting there. So, I think the jury thing for Adam only makes it more appetizing for Tyson to want to take him out.
Yeah, him walking into this lion and hyenas thing was probably the best case scenario for him. This is the best case scenario for him to live through right now, because, you know, everyone else, like, the resumes are still being built, so to speak, for the end game, for the tribal, what have you. But in the game of like the ultimate social game is the game of life. And the fact is that Tyson's been living this life both in and out of the game with a lot of these people. So he's primed. He's got a good resume that in that way already set up for him. He just has to worry about making it as far as he can. So as long as he follows through and trying to make it to the next one and the next one and the next one, that's all he needs. And getting rid of people that would be, you know, likable to take to the end because you can just get the 2 million cut, get him out. So it works out for him. I think this was a win for him. And I think next time around, if he tries to get another one of that kind of person out, is an even bigger win for him if he's able to do it.
Yeah. Tyson, this is when Tyson tells us he's never loved confusion in the game of Survivor. He's always wanted it to be straightforward, but he's learning that if you create enough confusion, people start forgetting about you a little bit. And it's like, I like this. I like this from Tyson. I think this is correct, that the more chaos, the better for Tyson. Tony is then going to be informed that Adam, Tony finds out that Adam was trying to flip the vote on Sarah. And so now they're all voting Adam. Ben is with them too. Tony is shocked at this information. So this tells me, right, there probably was an actual plan to take out Sarah that was going to be hidden from Tony, that Tony was going to be blindsided with this, but then they decided to change their minds and go after Adam. And so the line to Tony was, well, and Ben as well, we didn't hear Ben find out about it, but I'm sure Ben would have been left out as well. The line to Ben and Tony, and ultimately Sarah, was Adam is trying to get Sarah out, therefore we have to get Adam out. When in reality, they were actually going to go through with it, but Tyson flipped it around. So that tells me that they, again, this group of Tony, Sarah, and Ben, they might have been left out on this. I mean, obviously, if it was Sarah would have been left out. But certainly Tony and Ben seemingly in danger of being left out on this vote.
Yeah, if that did fall the way, if that was what would have happened, we would have started the episode with three new people on the outs, potentially. But then that would have been really fun to see, because I think those three on the outs probably can make more damage happen than the people that were currently on the outs from the start of this episode. But I mean, that's not what happens at this point, because they get a whiff of it. And then we get more chaos that comes through, because we're not even done the chaos. This is chaos plus. We're going to continue on with this.
Yeah. And this might be an indication of what happens in the following episode. If it really is time for this group to break up, then we might see that Tony, Sarah, and Ben are on the bottom of wherever this shakes up, because it seemed like they were in this tribal. And so it wouldn't surprise me if the same thing happens in the following tribal when everything actually hits the fan.
Well, it's like you said, Sarah is low-key the glue in that group. Mm. So you take Sarah out, I believe Jeremy and Tyson can bring in Tony. Like, let's keep doing lions, hyenas. Like, that's good for us. I think they recruit him. I think that leaves Ben also going that side. I think that leaves Sophie on a bit of an island, because I think Sophie's someone that has had control, even though it doesn't seem like she has all that much control. And that leaves her on a bit of an island. So that is a slam dunk of a move to take Sarah out. But it is the type of move that once there's a whiff of it going on, you don't want someone like Sarah or anyone in Sarah's corner really to catch that. These are all proven idol finders, idol utilizers. So you don't need any of that happening. So if you take a hit on Sarah, it's got to be the most silent assassin type thing ever. And this was clearly not the time for it once the cat was out of the bag.
Yeah, and so Tyson is going to let Sarah know, with Jeremy there as well, that, hey, Adam was trying to rally people against you, but don't worry, we're getting Adam out. Sarah's pissed. She's like, what? And she looks at Jeremy, and Jeremy's sitting there just like, oh. Just like, he just gives like a little shrug, like, I don't know, man. I'm just hanging out today. I'm really like Jeremy in the entire episode is just hanging out in the same spot, just laughing at all of the different plans that come to him, which is hilarious considering the fact that it seems like he was at one point about to make a power move, then didn't. But throughout the entire thing, he was just like, really? We're doing this now?
I love it. I mean, it reminds me of similarly, when Boston Rob was playing with the bar game string thing and people kept coming to him in that episode, I kind of got the similar vibe, but in a more laid back situation. Like, he's not getting this information to like form a new coalition, new plan. He's just hanging out and getting the info. And he's like, listen, I can see the chaos around me, but what good is it going to do for me? I'll just stay here and get the information delivered, and then I'll know what we're going to do, and I'll just go with that. As long as it's not his name, why would he want to worry about that? He's fine.
Yeah, and I think that this was great by Jeremy, who in the previous episode had pushed really hard while having immunity to try and get Nick out. He ultimately fails, but he's definitely seen as pushing really hard. And so it seems like he spent the entire next round just chilling, because if Nick goes, whatever. If Adam goes, whatever. If Michelle goes, even, I think, whatever. If Sarah goes, whatever. As long as he's not the one driving, any of those people could go, and Jeremy will be fine with it. And so he's just going to sit back and let other people drive the car for a little while. And I think that this is absolutely what he needed to do after a little bit of a stumble in the previous episode.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much wanting Wendell in his corner, wanting a solidified thing with someone like Wendell, going to bat for him and that not working out. I think he will thrive better in a fluid situation. The less he looks like he's got friends that he's super tight with, the less those people are going to get targeted, the less he's going to get targeted. So it was the perfect opposite move of this time, just shush, because also I don't have immunity. So why am I going to put my neck out there? Let me just hang out and see what happens. I think he sees how chaotic everything is. It's better for him to wait and see what the reshuffle is moving forward and do nothing right now.
Yeah. So Sarah says that she is pissed. You do not throw her name out. Adam is going to learn the hard way what happens when you throw her name out. So she goes to Ben and she tells Ben that Adam said that Ben and Sarah were too close. I imagine this came from Tyson telling Sarah, who now is telling Ben. Then Ben is going to go confront Adam about it. And he says, did you say that Ben and Sarah were too close? And Adam's like, I mean, a lot of people have said that. Ben's like, who? Everybody. Like who? Did you say it? I've been part of. No, I didn't say it, but I've heard people say it. Who? Ben, it doesn't matter. It does matter. Why does it matter? It matters to me. Dude, you're going to force me. All right, no, don't leave. I'll tell you. I'll tell you, okay?
So awkward. I mean, I think from the minute that Adam hesitated, he had lost Ben. He had immediately lost Ben. There was no recovering this. No matter what he said, it wasn't working. And what he was saying was even much worse. I would have rather complete crickets and awkward silence between them for 10 seconds. Because the more he was like, everybody was saying it, it's not going to work at all. But you've already lost Ben. You and Ben were pretty much like just waiting for something to happen. Ben, I think, at least was waiting for something to happen, a reason. And this was enough for him. Like, he was out on this completely. And my favorite part was like, no, please come back. I'll tell you. I promise. I'll just come back. Just don't walk away. And Ben's gone.
Yeah. Adam tells us, he says, you know what? Ben plays a lot more like Boston Rob than he'd ever like to admit. And I think he's right. I mean, this comes straight from what Boston Rob did to Ben.
Yeah.
This is the alpha move, pushing in on Adam. And I have to say, obviously Adam could have like been a lot smoother in this conversation, but I think Adam is correct in what he does, which is not really name anybody, because first of all, he's the one that said it, and as far as we know, nobody else said it. They just agreed with him. So if he names somebody, obviously Ben is going to go to that person. They're going to vehemently deny it, and Adam's going to get even more trouble. So if he's already in trouble with Ben, and he already has people who have pointed him out as being the one that said something, then he might as well just stay in trouble with Ben and not get in trouble with anybody else. But again, like he could have been smoother in the conversation. Like, I think, you know, maybe the way that he's kind of screwed in this spot and no matter what he does, but like maybe the only way he could get around this is like, is if he's prepared for it. And as soon as Ben asks him, he's like, yeah, I did say that. But Ben, I want you to know I am not the only one saying these things. Literally, I've talked to a lot of people. Like, the only reason I said it is because it's a thing that like everybody has been saying. And Ben will be like who? And it's like, Ben, it doesn't do anything for me to name the entire tribe. It's literally everybody. And so like, I feel like that's the only way. Even if he does that, he still probably gets voted out. Ben is still probably pissed at him. But I feel like Adam handled it pretty close to as well as he could have, given the circumstances and the fact that he was screwed to begin with.
I think obviously the hesitation did not help, but had he turned around and done that, or even done a half truth and said, I said you guys were friends, I didn't say you guys were like too close game wise I just said you guys hung out a lot, like as friends, like you guys talk, you know, I mean I feel like you are you not that close of friends, and then like, you know, maybe it'll fall over. But I think he was dead to rights with Ben the minute this had happened anyway, because Ben was waiting for something to, you know, Ben has been shown to love agitating Adam. So to him, it's like playtime. Okay, let me go mess with Adam. But this time he talked about me, so I'm a little bit angry as well.
Yeah, because again, like the problem is that whoever said this about Adam, which he doesn't know who it was, because he said that in front of a lot of people, like, you know, no matter what he does, it will have to come back to somebody else. And he just doesn't have the social capital to carry a lie. And so like the second that he's being outed, like he's done. And that's like Tyson really just put him in a vice grip using that against him. We then get, he says, then all hell broke loose. And then we get this montage of chaos where Ben goes. So I picked out some of the key moments here.
Okay.
Ben goes to Tony and he says, you know what I heard, Tony? I heard that you were the one that threw my name under the bus. And Tony goes, no, who told you that? And Ben says, Michelle. Just like, okay, so apparently yeah. Michelle went to Ben and said that Tony was the one throwing Ben's name out. Very strange. Not sure what's happening there. Nick asks Tony if Tyson is the one that told Sarah that it was her. So Tyson told Sarah that she was the vote. And Tony goes, mm-hmm. And Nick goes, wow, damn it. Cause well, now I'm afraid he's gunning for me because he keeps telling everybody different stuff. And so now the chaos that Nick wanted, he's yeah. like, Tyson took that and ran with it. And now Nick's like, ah, too much chaos.
It was my chaos. I was in charge of the chaos.
So Nick gets a little worried about Tyson. That's something that could come up later. That's certainly, there's some history there. Then Sarah says to Sophie that she wouldn't mind writing Tyson. So again, this again makes me think that there was some truth to Sophie putting Tyson's name out there. Sarah telling Sophie she wouldn't mind writing Tyson. This, for all we know, could have happened before everything else, that Sophie really was putting Tyson's name out there. And then Nick brought it to Tyson later on. Nick, Tony, Jeremy are having a conversation. Nick says, so Tyson, and Jeremy's just like, huh?
Same spot again, in the same position.
Yeah. We see that Michelle tells Adam, she says these words, she says, she just told me to write Tyson. And then Adam says, well, they're saying Nick. So somebody, some female said to vote for Tyson. They told Michelle to vote for Tyson. Again, I feel like Sophie might have been out there trying to throw Tyson's name out. I wonder who told Nick that somebody told Sarah the plan. I wonder if that was Sophie. I don't know, but there's some sort of leak happening and there's some female player out there putting Tyson's name out. And we've heard that it's Sophie. I feel like it might be Sophie, even though we've seen none of it really on the episode.
Yeah. It's like someone grayed out Sophie, but her fingerprints are kind of all over this, but we don't know for sure because, you know, we can like try and break, like, I don't think it's Kim. Right. I don't think it's Denise. I don't think Denise has got agency to try and do anything like this right now.
Yep.
It's not her. That leaves. And it's not Michelle. Michelle's not talking to herself and deciding that someone told her she's not on the Dr. Adam, Mr. Klein situation. Mm-hmm. So that leaves Sophie and that leaves Sarah. Am I missing somebody?
It has to be Sophie or Sarah. Seems a lot less likely to be Sarah. We've heard that it was Sophie. So I feel like Sophie was really coming for Tyson, which I love to hear. I think that's completely the correct move for Sophie. If she came anywhere close, that would have been fantastic. I wish we had seen more from Sophie in this spot. But that's definitely something to pay attention to here moving forward. Potentially Tony, Sarah, and Ben might have been blindsided in this vote. Also, Sophie might actually be after Tyson. Tyson is probably aware of it now and was about to go after Sophie and might still be trying to go after Sophie. So these are storylines that we might see pop up in the future if we're reading it correctly.
Yeah, and if we are reading it correctly, I really hope that next week is the polar opposite of this week and we get less of the razzle-dazzle, reward challenge, peanut butter hunt, and we get more of everything that we've slept on, because even speculating and talking about this and putting the pieces together is just very titillating fun stuff for me. So I want more of this and I want more confirmation of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So that's I just love Jeremy continuing to react. So then Adam says, all right, I'm just going to write Sarah, but I think I'm going to need to go for that idol. I don't even know if it's anything. I could be completely wrong. Oh my God. I'm just imagining myself watching myself and I'm going like this. He's playing with so much fire. Please don't let it burn him. This is a high stakes game and I'm playing it on the edge. I just don't want to be playing it on the other edge.
I'm going to be very candid for a second. I wasn't too keen on Adam and I wasn't really rooting for Adam preseason or otherwise. I was like, Adam's not really my cup of tea for rootability, but I love the passion he has. I love that he cares this much. I love that he cares so much about it that he pictures himself watching himself and then having opinions about it. Like, this is passion that I want to see. This is passion that I feel. If I'm ever playing, this is what I feel. This is what I want. So I love all of that. And I love that he throws everything in the kitchen sink in every opportunity he has, whether he has zero agency or 100% agency. He's never going to just be chill. He's always going to be thinking, overthinking, doing a lot, thinking a lot, feeling a lot. It embodies what I feel like a very, very passionate fan feels in the moment from their couch, deciding how everything should go down and watching their favorites and watching their like rivals, their enemies. So it's a wild ride being Adam and watching Adam. And as much as I came into the season not really feeling much for him, I felt for him throughout this entire episode, and especially here going into the tribal.
Yes, and what a final in-game confessional from Adam as he heads into the tribal where he is going to get voted out. They all talk about how crazy it was at camp. Crazy, it was crazy. Denise says, I aged a few years today. then whispering starts happening. So I tried to catch some of what was happening. Kim asks Jeremy at one point, are you changing your vote? And Jeremy says no. And then like Ben gets involved and Jeremy's like, I'm cool, like I'm not doing anything. Adam goes to Nick and he says, I was told to go you. Were you told to go me? And they both agree. And so then Nick is like, so what do we do? Do we go Sarah? Nick is like, Adam's like, yes, I guess. Adam goes to Sophie and he says, I don't feel good. And Sophie says, I think you should be fine.
This played to me like in Avengers when Peter Parker talks to Tony Stark. I was like, he's going to get pixelated.
I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark. I don't feel so good, Sophie. She's just like, it's going to be okay. Sophie, when I heard this from Sophie, I got big bad vibes here for Adam. When she said, I think you should be fine. It should be, no, you're fine, Adam, don't freak out. But when it's not, then that's definitely not a good sign. The first of many very bad signs for Adam in this tribal council.
Oh, man.
So he starts to get into it with Ben, and they're just like arguing back and forth as whispers are happening all around them. And this is, I feel like, where Adam could have handled this better. Not that he probably could have done anything to change his circumstance, but it's hard to know. I don't know why there was so much whispering happening if the plan had always been Adam. I don't know what was happening there, but clearly Adam needed to be more involved in the whispering and not so involved in getting distracted with Ben. But instead he's spending a lot of this time, seemingly, I mean, I'm sure this tribal lasted like 2 hours, so this right. criticism is probably completely null and void, but based on what we saw, it seemed like he spent a lot of time distracted with Ben, arguing back and forth, and at one point he's just like, Ben, you're so sensitive.
And the jury loved this. I think the one thing that Adam did successfully, and maybe this was already a feeling, because for me, I was shocked when Ben was like part of the Lions, so to speak. When this first happened, I was like, really? Ben has been put in this tier by his peers? Okay, you know, sure. I'm not going to judge it, whatever. But I think after him saying, you're so sensitive, and the entire jury kind of laughing, Ben's a hyena. And I think, I hope Ben sees it. I hope we see if this pays off or something. But Ben is definitely a hyena amongst the Lions, as far as we can see here. And Boston Rob did talk about, as a juror, he's whispering that Ben's so freaking paranoid. Mm. That's not a good look for Ben anyway. Mm. So I think what Adam did is Adam bequeathed his position as the, you know, goatly person that was probably sitting there to Ben. In this moment, he passed his crown and said, here, Ben, you are now the dummy. And now Ben is going to be the resident dummy, and we'll see how that goes. And it was just so funny how Ben was so pressed about this Adam thing, enough to keep talking about it. Like, if you're in a good position, this guy's going to go bye-bye. Like, let it be. You don't need to involve yourself and have an argument with Adam in front of the jury, especially if you know that homeboy's about to leave. Like, this is not a good look for you at all. So this was a horrible thing for Ben to entertain, as much as it was for Adam to waste time on it while everyone else was whispering and confirming with one another that, hey, stick to the plan or don't stick to the plan or whatever they were doing. Let's just get this going. Let's just get Adam out of here. Look what he's done.
Yeah. Adam does lean in and talk to Jeremy and Tony and them. And he says, are you voting for me? And they're like, no. He's like, well, then who are we voting for? And they go, who are you voting for? He's, it doesn't matter who I'm voting for. I'm not going to make this call. And I say, no, it does matter, Adam. And he's like, oh man. And then, Tony's like, what do you want to do? We just want to like read out our votes right now. What we were supposed to go up to the voting booth. We write down a name and then Jeff goes and grabs the things and he reads out the votes. That's how this works. And I was like, I know how it works.
Again, Tony, tell it to me like I'm five blotchos, just killing it. I love it. Also, I want to make an observation here. So right as this tribal kicks off, Nick is the one who talks about, if this is winners at war, this is a sad excuse for a war. It kind of sounded a lot like Sierra Easton to me, where Sierra Easton's like, hey, I'm on the bottom. That means no one's playing. That means everyone sucks. So let's play. Let's do something. Let's get it going. And I bring this up because he kind of starts this and then Adam takes it and runs with it. And then at the end, Jeff is like, so Nick, how do you feel about this? He's like, oh, I feel much better right now. And yeah. Adam's like, not me. Like, I don't feel better.
But if Nick feels better, I do not feel better. If Nick is getting comfort right now, I am not getting comforted right now. I don't think this is good for me. I don't think I'm okay. Am I okay? Is it me or someone else?
Crickets.
Anybody?
Crickets. Okay. Yeah. This was probably the most awkward part of the episode, which is surprising to say because I thought we had already gotten peak awkward and then they did this to us and then there was the silence. And it was like the jacket incident with Angelina and Natalie, but times 10 and also before the exit was happening. So the impending exit, and at this point, we all know he's going to try and go for that, like the fleur-de-lis anyway. So now I'm like, oh my God, it's going to get more awkward. This is just an awkward mess that is not going to stop quite yet. It was a lot.
Yeah. And I think, again, a perfect representation of like how much Adam would not lay down and die, like more so than I think almost anybody we've ever seen play the game, that typically what happens when you get voted out is that people tell you to your face that you're fine, and then you're just kind of like, I guess I hope that it's fine. And you might do whatever you can. You might basically know it's you, but they'll still tell you that it's not you. Adam is not content with that. Adam literally forces them into a standstill to the point where he's asking them, is it me? And they're literally just not even answering at this point. Like, he literally brings it to as far as it can possibly go, to where winners are now basically acknowledging, yes, Adam, it's you. Literally fighting to the end. And he's still not done, because he's gonna go for the voting podium idol. He stands up, he walks over to it, and before he even grabbed it, I was like, that thing's not even gonna move, is it? He grabs it, does not move. He's, damn, nothing, huh? And he keeps trying, because at this point, like, it's obviously not coming out, but it's like, I mean, if I just go back now, like, it's even worse. I gotta just stay up here and keep trying a little bit longer. Just nothing. All right. Worth a shot. I don't know.
Yeah, you committed to it, right? He's been talking about wanting to do it, and now that he's there, it's like, okay, maybe it's already wrong, but A, I can't go back immediately. I look stupid. I don't want to face the stupidity. But B, what if it's just wedged in there? What if I use both hands? Maybe it'll fall out of, maybe it's a thing. Like, he has no, like you said, this kid will not stop. He will not stop. He will keep going. Even when he's down and out, he'll throw the kitchen sink all the way until he's out. And then even then, he'll try and see if he can come back. He is not willing to leave it to fate. He is not willing to give it the chance. Think of the silver lining. He will not stop. So watching him just pull at it while also seeing everyone's reactions kind of be like ridiculing him, as much as I felt for him. I felt so bad for him. So bad for him.
Just going for it. And he goes, I don't know. Maybe it was an idol. I don't know. Yeah. And then Jeff, just twisting the knife. You're convinced it's not? I mean, is it? Can I play it? I want to play that. Like, you can see the thought process in his head. Like, wait, is it? Wait, do I just play it? Can I play it? Oh, I gotta say that I'm gonna play it before anybody else says they're gonna. I'm playing that. I want to play that. And Jeff is just like, you want to play the thing that you can't even move off of the voting podium. He's like, yes, I want to play that, Jeff. I want to play that for myself. And Jeff says, if this is an idol, that would be historic. This is not a hidden media.
Really let him have it. Really dragged it out on him. It was so sad. And because, I mean, it's very clear how Adam is. You give him an inch, he will take the inch. He will take a centimeter. Give him a millimeter. I'll take a millimeter. Like, that's fine with me. You know what could have been next? He could have been like, hey, I think the urn is an idol. I'll play the urn. And if it's not, you throw it in the fire and nothing counts. Like, he'll do it. He doesn't care. He's just trying to figure out a way to get out of this. Always. There's always got to be another step. And it hurts. It feels bad. And like, you know, Jeff kind of goaded him on. And I don't like that. But also, like, it was for TV and it was fantastic viewing experience, even though by the end I was dying of awkwardness and uncomfortableness for Adam, but it was still, I couldn't take my eyes off it. It's like, it's uncomfortable, but I'm watching, like, I don't mind. Like, it's still happening. So yeah, that's how I feel. It's a lot.
Well, we then get the, I thought, a great moment. The votes are read. It's Adam. You know, there were a couple votes for Nick to split the vote. Adam went for Sarah, but everyone else went for Adam. Adam is voted out. He brings his torch up to Jeff and he just says, it was worth the shot. And Jeff just says, always.
I think when Mary, I think it was Mary who said it, and I'm giving the credit to Mary. Mary, if it wasn't you, you just got credit for someone else's tweet. But Mary said this was the next best always since Snape from the Harry Potter series. Mm. And I'm inclined to feel the same way. This was kind of a moment where, you know, the feelings were coming out. And I didn't think I would have feelings about anything Adam does in this game. But I was like, you know, he really tried that. He really tried everything he could. And you know what? He's not out of the game yet. He's on the edge. He's going to try. He didn't want to be on the edge. He's still going to try more. I believe he's going to try harder than pretty much everyone there, maybe except Boston Rob. But that's just who this kid is. He will never stop. As long as he's got a gristle of stake in this game, he is going to go for it. And I commend him on that.
Yeah, and Jeff does say in his little recap thing that he does that he really respected what Adam did, and like, yeah, he was messing with him a little bit, but like he really did respect the hustle. And so Adam walks out. He's just made too many mistakes. Damn it! He bequeaths to Denise. He says even if she knew I was going home, that's. Screw all the rest of you. He says he goes to Extinction. He says his last confessional of the episode. I made one too many mistakes. Three strikes and you're out in Survivor, which I like three strikes and you're out. If you're Adam, most people, it's one strike and you're out in Survivor. But Adam just keeps fighting. But he says the thought that there was an idol at Tribal allowed me to play more aggressively than I should have. And it cost me. This was an interesting take on Adam's game it's just, again, this is Adam. He's such a fan of the show. Like, this is the kind of take that I would have on the podcast about Adam that like Adam normally wouldn't know, but like Adam knows. Like, Adam is already analyzing his own game from that perspective. And so seemingly from Adam's perspective here, he feels like he was a little too aggressive against Sarah. And he felt comfortable doing that because he thought he had an out there with the idol at Tribal. And if not for that, then he might have been a little more cautious. And if he had been a little more cautious, perhaps wouldn't have gone home here. Seeing how it played out, I think Tyson would have targeted Adam anyway. I mean, Tyson uses the fact that Adam convinced people to go after Sarah, and that might have been the reason Tyson went after Adam. But as we talked about, taking Adam out of the game was actually Tyson's best call, I think, regardless of whether he's going after Sarah. Maybe Tyson would have had a harder time making it happen if Adam hadn't gone after Sarah. Maybe Tyson wouldn't have thought to go after Adam if not for Sarah. But my personal read on it, I think he would have been out anyway. I think that Tyson would have made the move and would have gone for Adam, even if Adam hadn't pushed for Sarah.
I think that Adam pushing for Sarah allowed Tyson to be more push Tyson to be more vocal, because I could see Tyson trying to operate the Jeremy way and just stay still and quiet because he's just come back in and this could put a spotlight on him. But Adam doing that gives him enough of a reason to start verbalizing himself. But ultimately, I do think that someone else somewhere would have brought up Adam, even if it was a throwaway, and Tyson would have tried to bring that up, be like, yeah, I'm good with that name you just said. Yeah, I'm good with Adam. Let's do that one. So I don't doubt that that could happen. But I do think that just that one scene gives him enough of a case to make against Adam, which doesn't seem like he's going out of his way to do it. It's him looking out for someone else and everyone else's well-being, which is good for everybody.
Yeah, but he could also be right. And maybe if he doesn't make that move, Tyson doesn't have the ammo or doesn't have the thought to take Adam out of the game. Adam survives another round. Next time is when all the big guys start going after each other, and that gives Adam a path. And so I'm sure that's, you know, what he's thinking about every single night since it happened. So there you go. That was our episode. I thought this was great. You know, not nearly as much strategy as I would have liked, but there was a lot to read into at the very least, and so many great moments. Adam's exit was, I think, as good as we could have hoped for.
Yeah, again, I go back to, I did not expect to watch an episode that had a reward challenge and had some Edge of Extinction stuff and had a longer immunity and like not enough meet in the middle as far as strategy goes, but for me, that was fulfilled in the last 2 hours that we've been talking about all this. I feel like going through all this really got me excited for even a little bit more content down the line. I assume we've only seen what, one reward challenge really in the entire time? Has it been one?
I think we might have seen one other, but
okay.
I know there was like, at least one other that we didn't see, but
yeah. And I mean, this one, it had a lot to do with Sarah playing the card and giving Nick a free meal, and then Sarah's name coming up down the line. That kind of helps there. So it did make sense for it to be there. But I mean, Adam came into this game, episode one, chaotic and like talking about the marriage, which is now iconic in the lexicon. And for him to go out in this blaze of glory by trying to yank the podium off and present it to Jeff, it couldn't have gone in a more poetic way for him. Again, this is not the end of him. We are going to see him next week. He is going to talk about all this. He's going to have his moments. So it's just the gift that keeps on giving. It's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of comedy, and a lot of emotions along the way.
There was one other secret scene. Oh, before that, though, in the interview with Jeff Probst, where he made the retraction, he also talked about the concept of idols in tribal. He said the reason they haven't done it so far and the reason they probably won't do it in the future, although this could be him lying, right. is that they don't want the players destroying the set. Like if they know that there might be an idol on the set, then they're going to start like doing what Adam did and just start ripping at stuff. And they don't want that. It's sort of like when you go to an escape room and they're like, if it doesn't immediately come off, don't force it. We don't want you to destroy anything. Like, so he said if there was going to be something, it would probably be more obvious. And that they don't want people like if you have to deal with like the entire cast sitting on the stools and then like Jeff starts asking questions and one just starts like getting up and walking and starts just pulling at stuff. Just like, excuse me, we're trying to film a thing here. I could see where that could go a little bit wrong. I do still hope that they do find a way though in the future.
Yeah. This is the opposite of Big Brother doing a hide and go veto and letting everyone trash the house. They don't want that to happen. It makes sense. And like, I personally think it'd be funny if it's kind of like an escape room where they're like, if you see this symbol, it means don't touch it. Like this sign means, someone's tried this and we don't want you to touch this surface anymore. It's not part of the game. This outlet is just an outlet. There's no like secret key to it. So all of that being said, again, it goes back to, and I know Adam's talked about this at this point, so I hope it's okay that we talk about it for a second. This goes back to a moment in Survivor South Africa where a contestant took an idol from pretty much the same spot that Adam went for in front of the host himself. So Adam got this by watching. He was damned by loving Survivor too much and watching international editions, which is insane. But other editions have done it. I could see them doing it. This is a valid reason for them not to do it. It's like the whispering. Now it's always going to be there. Everyone's always going to flip stuff around. I think it's probably the same reason why we aren't seeing it in the voting area by the where the urn is initially, where the shelves are. Although, why put shelves there if it doesn't come into play? So I don't know. It could be smoke. It could be just lying so that no one's doing it. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I want to see it or not, because maybe it's just too much. I don't know.
I think it would be fun, but they have to find the right way to make it happen. So we do get one other secret scene talking about the reward challenge, and it's basically Tyson talking about his thoughts on reward challenges in general. He says he loves them because basically either he wins and he gets food, or he doesn't win and that's fine. This doesn't need the food. You can just eat the rice, like that's cool. But also if you lose, then you can kind of bond. It's kind of a bonding experience with the team that you lose with because they're pissed and like jealous, and stuff. And so you can like bond over that jealousy. So it's really just a win-win no matter what happens.
Yeah. And he talked about it being a stress-free break from the game, which in its own right is worth at least a couple hours of I can calm down because everyone else is calming down. So I don't have to turn it back up again. And I can just, you know, go to sleep a little bit and then wake up later. It is a win-win. That is a very positive outlook on it, win or lose, and I appreciate that.
All right. So that's what we have from the episode and the secrets. Not many secret scenes from this this week. They're slacking off, guys. So we need more content, not less. But we do have the Legacy Watch to talk about here, Puya.
Yes. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's talk about the Legacy Watch. Here it is on the screen. If you're watching along, this is where we left off last time. I can tell you actually that I do leave the survey up for people to continue to get their votes in as the week goes on. I close it when the next episode starts. Over that time, I did say that Kim was straddling the line of legend. She actually did fall over the course of the week back down into the top tier over the last week. But don't worry. We've got a new week of results to talk about here as we move into the Legacy Watch. All right. Legend tier. We have Parvati still in number one. Number one spot. She actually moved up a bit. People enjoyed the mouse in a... She's the... What is the mouse in a mouse experiment or something? Or a rat experiment?
Going for the cheese.
She found a thing. She got some tokens. People liked it. She moved up from her already top spot from the top spot there for Parvati. In second place is Rob, still in the same spot. No movement at all, actually. Exactly the same as where he was before. Then in third place, as per usual, it's not usual, actually. We had a shift, guys. In third place.
Ooh.
Kim Spradlin.
Nice.
Jumping back into the legend tier and over Sandra into the number three spot in the legend tier. Massive move forward for Kim. She's basically back to where she was at the very start of the season before any of the season started. She is basically back exactly where she was before, but now she is above Sandra because Sandra has fallen since her original time before the season started. So now she is sitting there in third place overall in the legend tier, Kim Spradlin.
I don't hate it. I mean, like you said, she is the new record holder for most immunity wins, female player. Love that. She is still here, you know, given all the stuff that was going on. I think that Kim is one of those people that I don't know. I think a lot of people, you know, coming in wanted the proof. There was either you're either a diehard Kim fan and you accept that she had the best single season win, or you're like, I don't know. I need to see a little bit more. Give me more evidence. Give me the proof. Give me the proof. Put her in a cast of all good people. Let's see how that goes. She's still here. She's still rocking it. She's winning an immunity. She's, you know, no one's saying Kim. So this is all good for her legacy. And I see it. I see her being in the legend tier. Now, the 1, 2, 3, 4, that is more subjective probably. But I like what I'm seeing. I'm very happy with this right now.
Yeah, very solidly in the legend tier, I think, is where I would put Kim as well. Her performance thus far on this season has been so impressive. She had that weird first episode where she was on her knees. In some ways, like, that worked for her because she had such a reputation coming in that being so vulnerable seems to have helped with that reputation. Now, again, as the audience is seeing her move back up into the legend tier, I can't help but think that the winners on the season are also starting to think that. And I do wonder if this will put her in a spot where she is going to be voted out. And so the question for the Legacy Watch becomes, can Kim's legend status withstand being voted out before the finals, essentially? I think it can, especially where it is now. It's a very strong position. And I think that what we've seen so far from Kim should cement her status as a top tier legendary winner of the game. This is a winner season and she is in the driver's seat right now, seemingly playing so well. I'm very impressed with what she's done this season.
And of the people left right now, I think, you know, going back to the lions and the hyenas, it's like, okay, so who's the Lion King? And, you know, you can debate this or that was Jeremy. It's Tony. I don't know. You know what? Maybe this man. There's one Lion Queen right now, and it's Kim. And I think that I'm very willing to say that as far as the legacy goes and just perception, what everyone's feeling there, I think she is the Lion Queen at the moment. So I could see this putting a bit of a spotlight back on her, given that she also just won immunity. So we could see that happen going down the line. But as of right now, again, Kim is doing amazing. Her trajectory from episode one, where I didn't expect to see her be that way, to now, where this is more what I expect to see from Kim. It's been good so far. It's been positive. Let's see if other people catch on to it.
Yes. So after Kim is, in fact, Sandra. There, number four on the legend tier now. Still moving up just a little bit from the drop that she experienced from the terrible move that sent her home. But she's still climbing a little bit back up every single week. Not quite enough to overcome Kim, though, at the moment. Then we have Tony. Mm-hmm. Who has made it into the legend here as well.
Boom.
Boom.
Oh,
lots of movement on this episode. Tony with a big boost forward lands. He was very close. He's been very close in to the legend here for quite a while. After this episode, though, he saw a moderately sized boost and has put him somewhat solidly into the legend tier, which gives us five legends total here, as Tony makes it out here, rounds out number five.
Love it. I mean, again, Tony is someone coming into the season not feeling too good about it, but also Tony is someone who I think us all as a fandom can very much express that his season is what a lot of people recommend new Survivor fans as an entry level season because of how fun it is, because of how enjoyable it is. He did have a big control in the game, but he was also fun, chaotic in the game. And then we saw him fizzle out real quick in Game Changers. And that kind of made all the naysayers, all the non-believers like, see, Tony was a one trick unicorn, one timer club. He can't repeat that again. And maybe Tony was like, hey, I don't think I can repeat that again. Tony comes in. He's doing nice. He's doing the social game right. He's, you know, playing in a way where he can teach it to people like they're five, but also no one is seeing that as a dickish move. No one is seeing that as a malicious thing. Everyone loves him. Everyone wants him on their side. And he's still a lion. Despite of him being kind of quiet, he's still a lion amongst the lion hyenas debate. So all of that considered, and he's still sitting here and he's clear and no one, his name isn't coming up. Ben's is coming up. Sarah's coming up. Sophie's, he's sitting there. He's sitting pretty. He was very quiet this round. And that shouldn't be a thing that Tony can do. Tony should be on the radar at all times. Tony is known to be on the radar at all times. So for him to be able to go underground, to me, that shows a whole new aspect of his game that I didn't think was possible for Tony Vlachos. And here he is. So, and actually, you know what? On top of all this, I think he's in the discussion to win the season, which is insane. I think he's one of the top contenders as well.
I agree.
So, I mean, damn, Taryn, if he's able to pull that off, not only legend tier, now he's the one that we get to debate with Sandra of like, who's the best two-time. That's incredible. That's insane. Loving everything I'm seeing.
Tony, also the as far as I'm aware, the first Survivor winner to comment on the Legacy Watch, even tangentially, somebody said that that Tony should be in the legend tier, and Tony replied on Twitter. He said, "Preach on."
Yeah, Tony's resurrection on Twitter is also very
so
very
good.
Fun.
Tony and love Jeremy it. On Twitter are my favorite. Kim as well. Feud. The three of them are so funny.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there you go, Tony making the legend tier. After Tony, we have Tyson, who is at the top of the top tier now. He actually fell a little bit from the previous episode. He had gotten a pretty significant boost from being the returning person from Extinction. I actually thought this was a great episode for Tyson, but in terms of like the bounce, he got a bigger bounce last week. I think probably maintained some of that bounce, but lost more than he gained, but still is going to keep his spot here at the top of the top tier.
It's like when a movie premieres at the box office and has a big jump, but then next week still has a jump, but regresses a little bit. Again, Tyson in his, we haven't commented on, I've just wanted to say this for 2 weeks now. His denim shirt is incredible. It just makes him, to me, like seem less harmful. So love that. And it makes sense for him to stand in the top tier where he is. And again, we sat here discussing his like if he is able to Hail Mary himself to the end, that's a whole nother debate. because also then he is a returnee. So we'll see what people think about that and his legacy. But the fact that right now his legacy is marked top tier, I am very okay with that.
Yes. And again, I was very impressed with him this week. So I do not have too much of an issue here. After Tyson is Jeremy, who is going to jump over Yule. Now, in the previous week, Jeremy had also gained. The week before that, Jeremy had also gained. Where did Jeremy fall? It was Jeremy had a big fall somewhere. It was week six. I don't remember what happened in week six that made Jeremy fall so far. But he's been slowly climbing his way back up ever since then. And now he is very closely behind Tyson here in the top tier, and very, very closely followed by Yule. He was actually tied with Yule coming into this podcast. I had to refresh to break the tie, and Jeremy actually pulled ahead by a couple points. It's a very tight three-way race here. Tyson, Jeremy, and Yule at the top of the top tier. And I can't argue with any of the three of them.
No, and for me, Jeremy's my favorite winner ever, personally. And I mean, I think his showing this episode was good. He bounced back. He didn't fall into a trap of, you know, he tried really hard last time. He adapted and calmed down this time. He just let the chaos happen without him. And I think it was the perfect situation for him to kind of neutralize himself moving into the next round, which looks like, again, there could be a lot of fireworks going. So if he needed to reset to have more stake and more capability in the next round, this was good for him. And yes. Yule is Yule. And that is all I need to say about that.
Yeah, Yule stayed about the same from where he was last time. He lost like a couple of points, maybe for being left out of peanut butter. I don't know. After Yule is still Sophie, who did fall a little bit, being invisible in this episode, but overall maintains her position. Not a ton to say about Sophie right now, because we still have such a hard time knowing where she's at. After Sophie is Denise, who is continuing to fall back down after the massive spike on the Sandra eviction or vote out. She's continuing to fall, but still up here in the top tier at the very least. She was like right at the top of the top tier, I think, back in the day when she made that move. But she's been falling ever since. Still, you know, in the top tier, but she is slowly fall. Like, she's still solidly in there. But if she continues to fall, she could theoretically drop it. I don't think that would be right, though.
Right. She kicked the door right open with that move and really opened everyone's eyes to, hey, Denise is capable of things that a lot of you guys were sleeping on. But now the door is going to start closing again because, you know, she has to reactivate it to reopen the door, reopen the discussion. But it's kind of like she was doing what she's doing right now and then had the one spike. And then now she's back doing what she was doing, which is like, I mean, if it gets her to the end and she wins this whole thing, respect, love it. But for right now, there's not enough that we're seeing and that we're privy to that proves that even though she's not doing flashy things, she is in the middle of all the conversation. She has stakes. She has social. She has an alliance. She has numbers. Right now, it just looks like she's a bit on the outs and she gets told who to vote for. And she's down with that because Denise is non-problematic and she's very much like, let me just get it to the next round and we'll reassess. I think she's able to get out of this position that she's in. But for right now, it does make sense that she's kind of regressing after that very, very intense move that she pulled on Sarah.
Yes. After Denise, Sarah has been hanging in here at the bottom of the top tier. She is going to maintain that position despite the mistake this week. In fact, she didn't really drop much at all. Just a very, very minor drop overall. Still not really that close to falling out of the top tier quite yet. Although I do wonder if we've hit Sarah's peak. I do wonder if it's all downhill from here as she's made this mistake. It seems like she could be a target moving forward. Or if this is just a minor blip and she moves back up.
I mean, it could be a minor blip and it's a positive thing. You know, Sarah showed emotion. Sarah is not just a criminal, not just a cop. Sarah's a people. There is a person, but we don't know that yet. We don't know how that's going to go. I mean, obviously it's not looking good with everyone talking about it. And Nick, the recipient, being like, I don't trust her at all. This doesn't change anything for me. So it's all bad. It was a human moment. Could come back to bite her. So the peak could have very well been in play. And her name did come up briefly, but they were very much able to shut it down. we have talked about on this podcast her being kind of the glue of her alliance. So we'll see if the glue gets unglued. I don't think of any witty things to say there, but we'll see if that works out, and that will change her legacy based on how she does. We'll see.
Yes. So so interesting to note here as we finish out the top tier that there are 5 people in the legend tier, 6 people in the top tier, which means 11 of the 20 people in legend or top tier. 4 of them are on four of them have been voted out. No, that's wrong too. 5 of them have been voted out. 3 of them are on extinction. 1 is back in the game. 1 is not on extinction anymore. Thanks for making it hard, guys. but point being, Tyson is, you know, still in there with a shot to move around because he's playing the game. But Parvati, Rob, Sandra, and Yule are all on extinction, which we've seen some fluctuations from extinction from people on extinction. But usually if you're on extinction, you're not going to move around too much because you're not really in the game. You can't really affect your legacy all that much. So interesting to see that they're still hanging out there in that group. A lot of the people in the middle and bottom tier are already on extinction. And so those people we start with here, Natalie, who stays at the top of the middle tier. Not much movement here, just a slight bump. You know, we saw a confessional from her, so we saw like a 2-point bump, basically. Then Ethan stays exactly the same. No movement on Ethan. And then Michelle also stays exactly the same, which I thought was interesting. You know, she was left out of the vote last week. We see that she has not really moved up yet from this position, and so we're still seeing, I think, people be like unsure, like, where is she, where is her spot in this game? She's so prominent on the show, like, where does this go? Getting the 50-50 advantage, not enough to move her from her current spot, though.
I mean, that makes sense considering that it was a bit of a contested move, and until we talked through it, until everyone thought about it. But then also, yeah, she's seen as on the outs, but she's also not targeted for being part of the outs. So I think there's more to Michelle's story to unfold here. And I think that we'll see her actually get to play some game, spin some game, figure something out, and get in a better position. I certainly feel that that's coming. So she's one that I could see moving up maybe to top middle tier, or maybe bottom of top tier, or maybe even higher than that, depending on how much more of her story unravels here. For now, it's kind of in a stalemate, so it makes sense that she's staying the same.
Yes. So after Michelle, we actually have a big jump. And this is this might surprise you that down in the bottom tier, our boy Adam Klein has been sitting there for a little while. He's been dropped into the bottom tier. He was voted out this week. And in an unprecedented move, that has actually skyrocketed his legacy. And he moves straight out of the bottom tier above Nick and Wendell, to right behind Michelle, in the middle tier. He is, this, which, you know what? Good, because he never belonged in the bottom tier. And so now that he doesn't have much room to move in the game, he is back up in the middle tier, where I think he should at the very least be landing here overall. And honestly, I think that, you know, this comes down to the entertainment factor, the never giving up factor, just the fact that, like, you know, I feel like he was being harshly judged for his position in the game, but when he gets voted out, it was more like, you know what, he was doing everything he could. Maybe if he had stayed in, he would have had a shot. And so Adam's legacy has been salvaged a little bit.
I mean, moving forward, let's say Adam was to never play again, and Adam gets brought up and it's like, oh, who was Adam? And then what you're gonna say is, he's a former winner, and he doesn't give up. He will keep playing and keep playing and keep playing no matter what. That is a very, very, I wouldn't say rare, because everyone's playing, but like, this is a whole new level of playing. And I don't know if many people are willing or able to do that. So I give him a lot of credit for that. I think that's what shows here. And I think the never give up attitude is what's helping him. Similarly, in a way, you know, Natalie being top of the middle tier, Natalie went out first and is continuing to situate herself on the edge, trying to push things on the edge, trying to formulate stuff on the edge. So I think that's why Natalie is also seen in that light. I think not giving up and just continuously trying, not just saying I'm not going to give up, but continuously trying to reposition yourself and do something better helps your legacy. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. So there you go. Adam back in the middle tier. After Adam is Wendell, who saw a small boost from, you know, which I think is probably a little bit of a bounce back from being voted out. And then after Wendell is Nick, who also saw a decent boost. In fact, Nick is close to surpassing Wendell. I think if Nick survives one more vote, he might be able to get past Wendell. But who knows there. Then in the bottom tier, you have Ben here, who continues to just small little steps forward for Ben. He is now only 13 points away from cracking the middle tier, which, you know, he started about 50 or so points away. Actually, hold on, like I can check the exact number. Yeah, he started about 53 points away. He's now 13 points away. So he's managed to climb 40 points.
That's incredible. And Ben is surprising to me because, yeah, he comes out the gate a bumbling idiot with Rob. But then and we've seen content where he's kind of the doofus. He's just dancing, being goofy. But also, I feel like, you know, his social game has been somewhat successful. He has laid back on doing the idol thing, which is pretty much what we've known him for. Obviously, maybe that's probably what it is that Ben's legacy coming in was not great because he's known for advantages and idols and immunity in his way to the end and not so much playing and presenting the social game. And I think here he's pretty much safe on the morals of his social game. So it doesn't surprise me that slowly he's making his way back in. Obviously, he's not doing incredibly socially like a Tony who we're looking at. We're like, damn, like you're really doing it. But he's still there and he's still working on it. But then his goof ups with Adam and this like sensitivity that the jury laughs at, these don't help him either. It's like, yeah, socially he's being kept in. It's good. But then at some point he's walking the line of being socially good, but also being taken to the end as someone who you can see yourself beating because he's kind of just goading his way. So we got to see if he's able to switch it up. We got to see if it's more to lean on his socialness or his dumbness, basically.
There you go. We also see, you know, we've occasionally seen a shakeup here at the bottom spot, and we're going to see another one here. Danny actually gets a little bit of a boost, I think, for figuring out that clue. She's always been in a very tight race with Amber. So any small thing will often shift their position here. And so that's what we're going to see here. Amber, I still had a slight boost as well from, you know, being in the episode, I think. but Danny saw a bigger one. And so Amber is going to take over the bottom spot in the bottom tier from Danny in this episode.
Makes sense. I mean, Danny, again, like I said, very surprising to me that Danny was the one who suggested the it having to do with the Edge of Extinction season prior. So proud of her for that. Amber, all I remember from Amber is from the secret scene, and that's not even her. It's Boston Rob telling her that the peanut butter was crunchy. So yes. If that's all I remember, obviously no bueno.
Yeah, so there you go. That is the Legacy Watch for this week. We'll of course be back next week to update it again. Still, you know, seeing so much movement, which I think is representative of how people change their views on the players as we watch them. And obviously, like, when you have your favorite player, your view of them is probably not going to change. And so seeing it shift is probably like, what? No, it's the same. But you're probably shifting your views on many of the other winners, and so that's kind of, I think, what's happening with a lot of them. And I'm still just very curious to see where we land at the end of the season after all of this goes down. And I will certainly, people have been asking, will I have one final one at the end where I include all of the winners? And the answer is yes. I will. Ooh. We can include once we get the final legacy at the end of the season, the season's over, one final Legacy Watch with these players. Then we'll do an additional one where we include the rest of the winners. And then that'll probably have different results. So.
Likely.
So we'll see how it goes. All right. So anything else, Puya, that you had that you wanted to talk about?
No, I had a lot of fun. And that's pretty much where I'm going to leave that at. Again, I think the word I've used the most tonight, I'll say it again, fluid. This season has been fluid. Everyone, the relationships to me seem like that. And honestly, it's just exciting to watch. It's not, you know, I think a lot of us were scared at the start of the season that, is this going to be another game changers where like we kind of see the writing on the wall from Merge? And the answer is not really. There's a couple of people that you can maybe like look at and be like, okay, I think it's between like these three, but I'm not ready to write a lot of people out because of how much movement is possible, because of how many gaps there are and how many places people can position themselves and put themselves into. So there's a lot to go. And with all the limitations we've had, being in the situation we're in the world and losing some of the shows that we are watching along the way, like Big Brother, it's just so refreshing and so incredible that we have this season of all seasons of Survivor to watch right now. It's really a blessing, and I'm glad I get to consume it.
Yeah, you know, like looking at this this Legacy Watch, actually, which it might not be completely representative of how they see things in the game, but if we're looking at this from a perspective of lions versus hyenas, who do we think are the lions and who do we think are the hyenas, and who do we think has the better shot at this point? So Kim, Tony, Tyson, Jeremy, those four at the very least seem to be lions. Sophie is here in the top tier, as is Denise and Sarah, but do they see Sophie as a lion or do they see her as a hyena? I don't really know.
Right. I mean, I would be inclined, based on what they're defining as hyenas and lions, I would assume they're looking at Sophie as a hyena, as was I kind of coming into the season. But very quickly, I've been proven wrong that she's a lion. And I think it's only a matter of time before they are proven wrong that she is also a lion. We'll just have to see if they're able to see it before it's too late or not.
Yeah, because I think that's the thing where like Sophie came into the season. Sophie and Denise both started in the middle tier, which you'd consider, I think, a hyena. Denise, I think, has solidified herself in the game as a lion based on what she did to Sandra. Yes. Sophie has solidified herself into the top tier with the audience based on what we've seen. But have the other players in the game seen this?
Right.
I'm not sure. You know, they've talked about her as a threat. You know, we heard last episode, Wendell was like, Sophie is playing. And we've seen that, you know, she carried that vote last week. She was going after Tyson this week. It seems like she's playing like a lion. So my guess is that they might see her as more of a threat than some of the others. So if that's the case, then, you know, we have these seven players as lions. And then we have, you know, the three players left as hyenas, which would be Michelle, Nick and Ben. But Ben is included as theoretically as I don't think anybody really sees Ben as one of the lions, though.
It's like a participation lion.
Like the lions need more numbers. And so they're like, hey, you've been deputized as a lion here. We're going to give you one of those like lion mane, you know, like mask things, like our hats. And we're going to pretend that you're a lion. But then as soon as we need to, we're going to take it off and be like, you're actually a hyena. So it seems like the lions do have the advantage here. But here's the thing. Here's the thing about why lions versus hyenas is so important on a season like this. I think that if the lions go after each other in the next episode, that these three or so players, Michelle, Nick, Ben, even like Sophie, whether she's considered one or not, I think those players become very, very dangerous and could easily end up doing exactly what Tony is worried that they might do. So I'm still very curious about this lion versus hyena storyline over the course of the season here.
Yeah, the door hasn't shut on, you know, a win on either side. The door isn't shut on a quote unquote game changers ending. That's not impossible. It's still a thing that could happen, but it's definitely up in the open and up for play, and anything could happen. So that's the exciting bit for me. It's not just dead set one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And it's still so many different ways it could go. That's why I'm very, very happy that we have this right now.
Yes. I need a lion watch. Like, who is a lion? Who is not a lion? All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week. I hope you guys enjoyed the deep dive into everything that's going on here. The update on everything in the Legacy Watch and everything else that we bring you here on this podcast. We'll be back, of course, next week to update again on week 10. Of Survivor Winners or Wars. Feels like it's already coming to an end, Puya. Don't tell me that's the case.
I know. It feels like it's been going on for a minute, which makes me feel like at some point the finale is going to peak up. But there's still more, right? There's still, what are we at the final?
Like 10? 4 episodes left?
Got about a month and change, maybe like 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? Cheeky 5 weeks. I'll take that. I mean, it's not, I would want more. I would want longer episodes. But as long as it's still more than a month, I'm happy and I'm feeling good that we're going into May with it. So color me happy.
Yeah. All right. So you can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren. You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. I'm definitely going to be doing some more Twitch streaming, especially over the next couple of weeks. Thinking about going back and watching old seasons of Survivor, because you can do that on Twitch now. And you know, just like watch it and talk about it as you watch it. So that should be fun if we do that. And then some other stuff. I will sometimes talk more about like the edit stuff on Twitch. I try to leave most of that out of the update itself, because it can get really meta really quick. But if you're interested in my thoughts on the edit, you can usually find me on Twitch to talk about that. And then lots of Big Brother stuff as well. Off-season Big Brother stuff coming your way. So check all that out again at Armstrong Taren on Twitter. If you want to find me there. Puya,
yes.
What are you up to?
Well, I am still doing The Masked Singer, because no matter what, The Masked Singer just keeps on ticking. We talked about the latest episode. We're at the final eight today with Liana. She talked about the scheduling, and Taren, they're doing, so this is what they're doing. I'll just give you this real quick. So they split the final eight into two groups of four, and we had the first part of the eight. We had the first four this week. Next week, we're not having the second part. We're having a sing-along spectacular that brings us from the first episode to now. Okay.
It's like a clip show.
Yes. And then we're having the second part. And then I think 2 weeks after that, we're having a road to the finals before the finals. So they're milking it.
So they're doing what Survivor should be doing. Hey, there's no content. Let's give them some more.
Yeah. Let's pump it up. I think the finale is slated to be like end of May or close to the end of May. So that's where we're at with that. You can find me at PuyaIsm. For any of that nonsense and the links for all the episodes coming up. Best believe we're going to keep going at it. Last season, we had 10 episodes for the podcast. We're on episode 11 and we're going to be going up to like 18. So it's going to be good times, guaranteed.
All right. Well, thank you guys again for joining us this week, and I'll see you next time.
Yeah, Taren's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taren and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taren.